Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. I have a very special in-studio guest today, and again, by studio, I mean my kitchen table. But we have Mom live in studio, and Elizabeth is with us on the phone.
Well, hey, we have the original round table at the Knights of Sir Arthur. I love it. Hey, Carla. Ah. How are you?
Hi.
Yes,
hey,
I'm down here with Sam. It's wonderful. I thought we might have a little bit of an issue because there's three dogs in the house and two of them are four dogs in the house and three of them are spazzes. But they're playing the game, it looks like. So with that, so on the agenda today, we're going to go a little bit out of order. I'd like, Mom has one, I think just one story for the Good News Report today. And we're going to start with that since,
wow.
And I'm going to step away and make some salads. But, so with that, I'm going to let Mom take the seat here and, here she is.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hi. I'm excited to be in the captain's chair with the noise canceled microphone. And the reason why we're doing it this way is because it's kind of, it's very good news, not just good news, it's excellent news because you've heard me over the months since I started doing this show with you guys talking about how I believe that the world is waking up and that the relentless propaganda that we are being subjected to is we're on the precipice of finally taking back our information. And there won't be any more things, what they call conspiracy theories, because as it turns out, 99% of the things that people call conspiracy theories are all true. Well, there's a woman named Dr. Naomi Wolf, who was on one of the, what I would call the front line of suppressing and shaming people over COVID on Twitter. Well, she pinned a Substack, and it's titled, Dear Conservatives, I Apologize. The subtitle says, My team was taken in by full spectrum propaganda. And was written on March 9th. And I'm just going to take my time today to read this article. And much of what Danielle's going to cover after I get done will show you why Dr. Wolf and millions just like her have their eyes opened because of a gentleman named Tucker Carlson and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy actually providing the real videos from January 6th. I have said all along that I believe that the 2020 election was stolen. It was stolen in a myriad of ways. And a million people or more marched on the Capitol on January 6th to have their concerns redressed. And we have an absolute right as American citizens to petition our government. And it's not necessarily even a petition. It's you will listen to me because you work for me. And when the other side, I would call them the deep state, realized, we actually gave them an opportunity to censor and ban and prosecute and literally take our voices away. But what happened was that you can only keep the lid on the box for so long. And so just a little bit about Naomi Wolf. She definitely was one of the ones on Twitter suppressing our voices when it came to COVID. But she's about as left-wing as it gets. So just a little bit of a setup for her. So this, again, was written on March 9th. It says, there is no way to avoid this moment. The formal letter of apology from me to conservatives and to those who put America first everywhere. It's tempting to sweep this confrontation with my own gullibility under the rug, to move on without ever acknowledging that I was duped and that as a result I made mistakes in judgment and that these mistakes multiplied by the tens of thousands and millions on part of people just like me hurt millions of other people like you in existential ways. But that erasure of personal and public history would be wrong. I owe you a full-throated apology. I believed a farrago of lies. That's an interesting word. I looked it up. Farrago, it means a whole bunch and multi-layered. Farrago, F-A-R-R-A-G-O, of lies. And as a result of those lies, these lies, and my credibility and the credibility of, excuse me, and my credulity and the credulity, that means believing a certain way, credulity of people similarly situated to me, she means the left, many conservatives' reputations are being tarnished on false basis. The proximate cause of this letter of apology is the airing two nights ago of excerpts from tens of thousands of hours of security camera footage from the United States Capitol taken on January 6, 2021. The footage was released by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, to Fox News commentator Tucker Carlson. While fact checkers state that it is misinformation to claim that Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi was in charge of Capitol Police on that day, and I just want to make the point that in this article, she's got the receipts. In charge of Capitol Police on that day, the fact is that the USCP is under the oversight of Congress, according to United States Capitol Police. This would be the same Congress that convened the January 6th committee subsequently and that used millions of dollars in taxpayer money to turn that horrible day and that tragic event into a message point that would be used to tar a former president as a would-be terrorist and to smear all Republicans by association as insurrectionists or as insurrectionist sympathizers and fellow travelers. There is no way to unsee Officer Brian Sicknick, claimed by some Democrats in leadership and by most of the legacy media to have been killed by rioters at the Capitol. Excuse me. Killed by rioters at the Capitol that day, alive in at least one section of the newly released video. The USCP medical examiner states that this officer died of natural causes, but also that he died in the line of duty. Whatever the truth of this confusing conclusion, and with all respect for and condolences to Officer Sicknick and Officer Sicknick's family, the circumstances of his death do matter to the public, as without his death having been caused by the events of January 6th, the breach of the Capitol, serious though it was, cannot be described as a deadly insurrection. Sadly, though, the contrary was what was reported. Officer Sicknick died 2 days after January 6th from suffering two strokes. There is no way for anyone thoughtful, even if he or she is a lifelong Democrat, not to notice that Senator Chuck Schumer did not say to the world that the footage that Mr. Carlson aired was not real. Rather, he warned that it was shameful for Fox to allow us to see it. The Guardian characterized Mr. Carlson's and Fox News' sin weirdly as overuse of January 6th footage. Isn't the press supposed to want full transparency for all public interest events? How can you oversee real footage of events of national relevance? Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, Senate Minority Leader, did not say the video on Fox News was fake or doctored. He said rather that it was a mistake to depart from the views of events held by the chief of the Capitol Police. This is a statement from McConnell about orthodoxy, not a statement about specific truth or untruth. I don't agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretation of the video as depicting mostly peaceful chaos. I do think it's a mistake to downplay how serious it is when a legislative institution suffers a security breach of any kind, however that came to be. You notice McConnell says, however that came to be. They haven't put that caveat until they actually got shown up for who they are, with the cops letting people in. However that came to be. This is, and I'm going back to her letter. I'm sorry. I had to put my own stuff in there for a second. But you don't have to agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretation of the videos to believe, as I do, that he engaged in valuable journalism simply by airing the footage that was given to him. And remember, by law, that footage belongs to us. It is a public record, and all public records literally belong to the American people. In a democracy, records belong to the people, explains the National Archives. Keep in mind that throughout this entire article, she's bringing receipts to back up what she's saying, unlike the legacy media. You don't have to agree with Carlson's interpretation of the video to notice the latest hypocrisy by the left. My acquaintance and personal hero, Daniel Ellsberg, was rightly lionized by the left for having illegally leaked the Pentagon Papers. The New York Times was rightly applauded for having run this leaked material in 1971. I do not see how Mr. Carlson's airing of video material of national significance that the current government would prefer to keep hidden, or Fox News' support for its disclosure to the public, is any different from that famous case of disclosure of inside information of public importance. You don't have to agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretation of the video to conclude that the Democrats and leadership, for their own part, have cherry-picked, hyped, and in some ways appear to have lied about aspects of January 6th, turning a tragedy for the nation into a politicized talking point aimed at discrediting half of our electorate. They weren't just going after Trump. They were coming after me and millions of my fellow citizens. Again, some editorializing. From the start, there have been things about the dominant Democrats and legacy media's narrative of January 6th that seemed off or contradictory to me. That does not mean I agree with the interpretation of these events in general on the right. Bear with me. There is no way to unhear the interview that Mr. Carlson did with former Capitol Police officer Tariq Johnson, who said that he received no guidance when he called his superiors, terrified as the Capitol was breached, to ask for direction. That situation, and pay attention to this word, is anomalous. That means it's never happened before. There is, and she goes on to say, there is always a security chain of command in the Capitol, at the Rayburn Building, at the White House, of course, and so on, which is part of a rock-solid security plan. And then she puts the link to the freaking security plan. There are usually, indeed, multiple snipers standing on the steps of the Capitol facing outward. I made note of this when I was researching and writing The End of America. There is never improvisation or any confusion in security practices or in what is expected of the security plan, including principals such as members of Congress or staff of the White House. I know this as a former political consultant and former White House spouse. The reason for a tightly scripted chain of command and an absolutely ironclad security plan in these buildings is so that security crises such as the events of January 6th can never happen. The fact that so much confusion in security practice took place on January 6th is hard to understand. There is no way to not see that among the violent and terrifying scenes of that day, as revealed by Mr. Carlson, there were also scenes of officers with the United States Capitol Police accompanying one protester who would become iconic, the QAnon shaman. Okay, so let me just editorialize again, and I want to just make the point that I often make. There is no such thing as QAnon. Please remember that. There are people that are called, that there is a queue, and he posts stuff for people to dig. There are Anons who do the digging, but there is no such thing as QAnon. That is a purely media propaganda made-up thing. But they still insisted on calling this guy Jacob Chansley the QAnon shaman. And keep in mind, he's dressed really crazy, and he has makeup and all kinds of stuff. And so I go back to Dr. Wolf's Substack. I was oddly unsurprised to see the QAnon shaman being ushered through the hallways by Capitol Police. He was ready for the cameras in full makeup, horned fur hat, his tattooed chest bare on a freezing day, and adorned in other highly cinematic regalia. I don't know what Mr. Chansley thought he was doing there that day, but so many subsequent legacy media images of the event put him so dramatically front and center. And the barbaric nature of his appearance was so illustrative of exactly the message that Democrats and leadership wished to send about the event, that I am not surprised to see that this his path to the center of events was not blocked, but was apparently facilitated by Capitol Police. A point I have made over and over since 9/11 is that many events in history, Danielle will love this, are both real and hyped. Actors in historic events have their agendas, but are also at times used by other people with their own agendas in ways of which the former are unaware. Terrorists and terrorism in the Bush era are one example. This issue was both real and hyped. Patriots or insurgents, depending on who you are, entering the Capitol can be part of a real event that is also exploited or manipulated by others. Here we go. We don't know yet if this is the case in relation to the events of January 6th or to what extent it may be the case. That is, where a real investigation must come in. And she italicizes real, because we did not have one with the January 6th committee. But as someone who has studied history and the theatrics of history for decades, I was not at all surprised to see on Mr. Carlson's security camera footage the person who was to become the most memorable face, in quotes, of the insurrection, in quotes, or the riot or the Capitol breach, escorted to the beating heart of the action, where his image would be memorialized by a battery of cameras forever. Interesting that the cameras were there too, weren't they? There are other aspects of the January 6th breach that seemed anomalous to me from the start. I study the relationship in history of buildings, such as the White House and the Capitol, to the U.S. public. I follow the way in which the public is either welcomed into or barred from these structures. The White House itself and the Capitol steps have often been open to U.S. citizens. They are public buildings. Indeed, inaugurations have been open public events in which the U.S. citizenry simply entered the building for the celebration. This tradition lasted from President Jefferson's inauguration in 1801 to 1885. Things got very chaotic indeed in 1829. On March 4th, 1829, Andrew Jackson upholds an inaugural tradition begun by Thomas Jefferson and hosts an open house at the White House. After Jackson's swearing-in ceremony and address to Congress, the new president returned to the White House to meet and greet a flock of politicians, celebrities, and citizens. Very shortly, the crowd swelled to more than 20,000, turning the usually dignified White House into a boisterous mob scene. Some guests stood on furniture in muddy shoes while others rummaged through rooms looking for the president, breaking dishes, crystal, and grinding food into the carpet along the way. The White House open house tradition continued until several assassination attempts heightened security concerns. The trend ended in 1885 when Grover Cleveland opted instead to host a parade, which he viewed in safety from a grandstand set up in front of the White House. And inaugurations were not the only occasions in which U.S. citizens approached their public buildings. She said their public buildings in Washington. So she goes on to talk about the Bonus Army, which is an interesting, veterans were offered or granted, in 1932 during the Depression to claim the financial bonus promised to veterans who had served in World War I. So a bunch of them gathered around the Capitol and sat there for a while until they cleaned them out. More than 25,000 veterans and their families traveled to Washington, D.C. to petition Congress and President Herbert Hoover to award them their bonuses immediately. So redress of grievances, which is what the people were there for on January 6th. On June 15th, the House of Representatives passed the new bonus bill by a vote of 211 to 176. 2 days later, some 8,000 veterans massed in front of the Capitol as the Senate prepared to vote, while another 10,000 assembled for the Reyes Anacostia drawbridge. The police were anticipating trouble because of the large crowds. The Senate debate continued until after dark. When it appears that the bonus would not be paid, many of the marchers refused to leave, and President Hoover ordered the Army to evict them. So they used tear gas, tanks, and a troop of saber-wielding cavalry to get rid of them. I mentioned the massing of the bonus army on the Capitol steps in 1932 to note that the dominant narrative around January 6th today often implies that it is an act of violence or insurrection simply to march en masse peacefully to the Capitol. We should be wary of allowing history to be rewritten so as to criminalize peaceful, constitutionally protected assembly at the people's house. Massing peacefully at the Capitol and other public buildings is part of our rights and inheritance as citizens, and this use of our First Amendment right to assemble has long history. Indeed, the public has traditionally had the right peacefully to enter the Capitol, to obtain passes to events, to gallery seats, and to witness the proceedings in other ways. The Capitol is not a sealed space exclusively for legislators, but it is one that is supposed to welcome the public in an orderly way. The violence, we should not be encouraged to forget this, and she brings the receipts again. I can post this article on Seeds of Change on the website. The violence of January 6th and its subsequent service as a talking point by the Democrats' leadership risks its use also to justify the closing off of our public buildings from U.S. citizens altogether. This would be convenient for tyrants of any party. Leaving aside the release of the additional January 6th footage and how it may or may not change our view of U.S. history, I must say that I'm sorry for believing the dominant legacy media narrative pretty completely from the time it was rolled out without asking questions. Those who violently entered the Capitol or who engaged in violence inside of it must, of course, be held accountable. I agree. As must violent protesters of every political stripe everywhere. That's usually the problem. That's why we get all bent out of shape, because plenty of protesters have caused damage very close to and in legislative buildings, but they have not been prosecuted the way the January 6th folks have. January 6th has become, as the DNC intended it to become, after the fact, a third rail, a shorthand used to dismiss or criminalize an entire population and political point of view. Peaceful Republicans and conservatives as a whole have been demonized by the story told by Democrats in leadership of what happened that day. So half of the country has been tarred by association and is now in many quarters presumed to consist of chaotic berserkers, anti-democratic rabble, and violent upstarts whose sole goal is the murder of our democracy. Republicans, conservatives, I am sorry. She goes on to say, I also believed wholesale so much else of what has since turned out to not be true by NPR, MSNBC, and the New York Times. I believe that stories about Hunter Biden's laptop were Russian propaganda. Dozens of former intel officials said so. Johns Hopkins University said so. Trump specifically cited a laptop that contained emails alleging to belong to Hunter Biden, said CNN fact check with plenty of double quote marks. Nope. I believe this all until it was debunked. I believe that President Trump campaign colluded with Russia until the assertion was dropped. I believe that President Trump was a Russian asset because the legacy media I read said so. I believe the entire Steele dossier until I didn't, because it fell apart. Was there, in fact, an infamous P-tape? So many other bad things were being said about the man. Why not? I believe that President Trump instigated the riot at the Capitol because I did not know that his admonition to his supporters, listen to this carefully. I believe that President Trump instigated the riot at the Capitol because I did not know that his admonition to his supporters to assemble peacefully and patriotically had been deleted from all of the news coverage I read. I wonder if some of the people listening to this knew that, that President Trump in his speech before people walked up to the Capitol said peacefully and patriotically protest. Because of lies such as these in legacy media, lies which I and millions of others believed, half of our nation's electorate was smeared and delegitimized. How do you say that word?
Delegitimized.
Yeah, that's one of those, yeah.
And my, yeah, you got it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And I myself was misled. It damages our nation when legacy media put words in the mouths of presidents and former presidents and call them traitors or criminals without evidence. Through lies, half of the electorate was denied a fair run for its preferred candidate. I don't like violence. I do believe our nation's capital must be treated as a sacred space. I don't like President Trump. Do I not? Who knows? I've been lied to about him so much for so long, I can't tell whether my instinctive aversion is simply the habituated residue of years of being on the receiving end of lies. But I like the liars who are our current gatekeepers even less. The gatekeepers who lie to the public about the most consequential events of our time and who thus damage our nation, distort our history, and deprive half of our citizenry of their right to speak, champion and choose without being tarred as would-be violent traitors deserve our disgust. I'm very sorry my former tribe is angry at a journalist for engaging in... Okay, wait. I'm sorry the nation was damaged by so much untruth issued by those with whom I identified at the time. I'm sorry my former tribe is angry at a journalist for engaging in journalism. I'm sorry I believe so much nonsense. Though it is no doubt too little too late. Conservatives, Republicans, MAGA, I am so sorry. That was well-deserved, well-written, well-said. And as to one of the people that she just apologized, Dr. Naomi Wolf, I accept your apology. Again, I believe...
Thank you.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
You know, I'm so glad that you read that because I don't get a chance to hear these things. Now, I'm going to tell you that as a fan of Naomi, and I've watched her and followed her because she has been put into the basement with Robert Kennedy Jr. as the disinformation dozen that no one should ever hear from. And she wrote that book, the book of the 10 Steps to Tyranny, and that we're at number 10. I'm so glad she, and you know what, I didn't know that she didn't like Trump. She never spoke for politics. She always spoke out for what was right and what was wrong. And what was wrong was everyone being censored. And I didn't know her, that she would even have been gullible enough to have believed what the narrative was after listening to her for years, and because she's been out and
it's
hard to find her. So I'm blown away with the fact that she was duped, but I love her and I have admired her for a very long time. And I thought, why? She's probably one of the most dangerous people out there because she has credibility, because she was
with the left. Yes.
She was silent. So bravo. I'm applauding over the bad dogs barking over that. That was great, Carla. Thank you.
Wasn't that a wonderful letter? I was so blessed to read it. I said to myself, the dam is breaking finally, and that pleased me. And so I'm glad you said that, Elizabeth, about Dr. Wolf, because journalists aren't supposed to tell you who they like or don't like or, on a political party. But so when I started by saying, you know, that I know for a fact she's on the left because of the stuff that she promotes on Twitter. and the stuff that she doesn't promote on Twitter. She's a radical feminist, which is wonderful. Okay. And so instinctively radical feminists don't will respond that way to people on the right because of the abortion issue. So even though you didn't know that she didn't like Trump and she was believing the hype, but that's because she's probably actually a good journalist and not putting her own stuff in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I question. I'm like, she didn't write how, because it doesn't sound like her. It didn't sound like her until towards the end. I'm like, yeah, but that was because this is the fine art of conversation and debate. She found the road to try to her and Bobby would say, you know, where are the true liberals when they locked us down and wanted us to live like little slaves and be forced to lose our jobs and be injected? She's like, where are the liberals? No one's speaking out against us. She took a stand for that. And through all of this, not a word about who she thought was the better president, but it was more the road of what's right and what's wrong. So I've always had a lot of respect for her. So anyways, I'm blown away. And it was very, very good. I've heard a lot about it. So I'm so glad that you read the whole thing. And you did a great job.
Yeah.
Great job.
So that is good news for the week. And that's, you know, about, you usually do about 30 to 45 minutes. And you did 30. So, you know, now she's eating salad.
You're not getting away that easy. So
yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. She's coming back. But I was eating a salad while she was reading.
Oh, you know what? I'm like, I want a salad too, so I made myself a salad. Thank you.
I've been
in romaine and homemade.
No lettuce, like just cucumber, olive, feta, chicken, tomato, red pepper.
I got to get. That's a good one. I don't have the feta. I need to buy the feta. Feta is a rich person's cheese that I don't have at the moment, but yes. I got the romaine sticks.
If you're not using sesame seed sticks as your croutons, you're missing out on life. They're spicy ones.
I am. I'm roughing it. I'm like a poor person. We don't have croutons in the salads, babe.
Let's get them. Put some bread in the oven.
I know. I make some garlic bread, perhaps. I just need to get some good fresh greens in my body. That sounds fantastic. I live on bread, cheese, and meat. It's terrible. And springtime is for cleansing. Got to change it around a little bit here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's funny. There hasn't been anyone who has stood up for Tucker yet. I mean, like I am on the cutting edge of the news and what's going on, I don't pay attention at all. And after we talked, it's so nice to hear from you outside the show. We had a nice little conversation. And I turned the news on. And I thought, I'm not a doctor, and I can't give medical advice, but our government needs to be sedated because they're crazy. They want to form a committee, a coalition, not a committee. It's always a coalition. You're going to have a coalition for those poor DACA kids that are afraid of getting deported. At the very same time that we're shipping all of these people that are coming in via, you know, the little anthill Speedy Gonzalez line of you know, we're coming to live here, and we put them on buses, and we're giving them phones and cars that they don't know how to drive, and they're driving the wrong way on one-way streets, and they all have their temporary plates, and I'm like, oh, my dear Lord. And we're buying them everything to make them comfortable, as we should, because as a Christian nation, we should help people. But in the very same breath, here's all these poor kids. They grew up here, and now they're afraid they're going to get deported. And it's like, no, this can't be. But they're insane. So that's the new thing on the news today.
They're just completely over, bitching about Tucker Carlson. And you're right. Like, and this is something that I'm like a little bit sick of hearing and seeing from, you know, our quote unquote movement, are people who are just like, oh, if you watch Tucker, if you believe this stuff from Tucker, you're just a hero worshiper and all of this stuff. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Why are you causing division when he's actually telling the truth? You know what I mean? Maybe he's never told the truth in his life, but if our movement is truly based on the truth, shouldn't you want to support that truth? And, you know, don't you have anything else to use your energy on? Like, you know, you claim to be self-sufficient to help be self-sufficient. Well, you know, why don't you do that instead of, you know, screaming at your echo chamber about, you know, especially when Tucker's right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm going to say I no longer am. I don't tie my kite to just any old wagon. I kind of like hang out and I listen and I learn, siphon through the bullshit, and I go about my merry way. And I create the movement. I'm not part of a movement. And I want to say that this group of people who think they know everything have done very little to move the bar up at all, other than to point fingers and complain that this is true and this is bullshit, but they've never gotten up away from their little phone or their keypad to do anything.
Right.
So
exactly.
I'm not part of that movement. And I am getting very tired. It's almost like shit or get off the pot. I don't want to hear that you don't agree. Your opinion means nothing. Your opinion is not going to save the world. Your opinion is not going to feed a stray dog. Your opinion
mm-hmm.
is nothing. And if you think it is, you're highly, well, you've got lots of problems. So, yeah, apathy, what is the other one? It's cynical. It's insane cynicalism. Cynicism, poisonous. It's deadly cynicism is what runs through these I think I know everything groups. And there's lots of them. There are all kinds of them out there. But the key, I guess the tattoo they all run out to get is it's inactivity. I can just spout off and point fingers and do nothing. And I'm sanctimonious. That's not ever going to get anything. And,
exactly.
And it's not, definitely not going to. I'm not going to have one bit of respect for you.
Right.
And
who cares?
Yeah,
if somebody's waking up, you know, because we've been in this quote-unquote truth or movement or around it or you know, above it for, you know, quite
mm-hmm.
some time now. But, you know, but there's still a lot of people out there. In fact, I would say the majority of people who still believe mainstream media. And, you know, when we can get
mm-hmm.
to these people and get them to start thinking – having doubts about their official news sources. Why in the world would anybody want to get in the way of that? As a matter of fact, what are you doing? Like, I thought the whole point is to wake people up. You know, why in the world would you
mm-hmm.
be getting in the way of normies actually waking up to something that's this important? Why? Like, why does that piss you off? Like, you know, I'm talking about one person in particular,
well,
but I'm not going to name her.
I think that was a, you know, there are not every group of people have a person like that, but those people are out there and they're like snakes in the grass. And, you know, every group has the bossy boss lady. You've got the hall monitor, you got the bean counter, you got the wild, crazy one that will not follow any directions at all and talks all the time. But then you've got this little snake in the grass that needs to manipulate everything. And you've got this.
Yes.
It's like everywhere. It's even like in the Senate and in the Congress and in politics and you know, they don't necessarily last in any one group because they're not welcome after people catch on to what they're doing. And that's almost like the spirit of the world is like this, you know, the great deceiver, Lucifer, pulling the wool over everyone's eyes right now. But when you
Correct.
Are able to see through the lies and the bullshit, that's when you're like, oh, wow. And you know, that's the great awakening, the enlightenment.
Revelation. They call it revelation for a reason.
Yes, exactly. This all makes sense now. And this is everyone will go through their process at their own time. And also not everybody is going to be able to have the discernment and the mental capacity and the awareness. Some people like the way it feels in their comfortably numb little comfort zone of not having to be accountable and not having to, you know, they like their information bubble, and they don't have to really do anything because the government's going to take care of them, and they'll tell them if they're going to be in trouble and we have to worry, or they'll tell them if you're going to be okay, or what kind of money.
And I was one of those people. The majority of my life, and I like, and especially when they overwork us so much, you don't really have enough time or energy to go looking for other news sources. So you stick with your trusted source of news. You don't question it, because if you did, it would just be too uncomfortable.
Do you know how I used to pick them? Was what captured my mood? What had the best commercials? And MSNBC had the best feel for a very long time. My sister used to get sick to her stomach. I know, seriously. And I used to like to watch Bravo. Those were my go-tos. And look how much I've grown. But my sister used to pop in, and my little niece would be sleeping on my chest, just newly born. And my sister almost wanted to, like, puke when she'd see what I was watching. Because she has Ann Coulter's book that she's reading. And I'm just like, you can't be mean. Why are you so mean? I used to think, I'm like, because I thought Ann Coulter was just this horribly mean person when I'd see her. But Ann didn't come with cool commercials. I bet if there's cool commercials that went with it and created a mood, I probably would have been watching Fox, but I liked this one better at the time. And then it was kind of like, I'm like, oh, I like this. I like this. And it's like, what is it? The, not aesthetics, but it's the, graphics and the mood, the colors, the mood, the music, or whatever, is what makes you comfortable to watching something. And, it just kind of changes. But why is it that you need to have something to look to be mesmerized by? Why are we not content to be, like, in constant wonderment and awe of, like, the sky and nature and good music, or making our own music? We've kind of, like, that's the missing component to true happiness and growth and freedom. And that is what I'm striving to try to get people to pull their head out of their asses and see that there's other things besides these little squawking boxes. But it's, at this point in time, I mean, it doesn't do anything, but it's like nails on a chalkboard. This is nothing.
Yeah. It's programming. They call it programming. They tell us it's programming.
This is Nazi propaganda, guys. It's
programming.
North Korea-style propaganda. They tell you in the nicest, sweetest way, we're not lying to you. It's safe and effective. We promise the trains are safe now. The water is safe to drink. We know. We've been there. It's like, well, then, okay, everything's okay. Thank God you told us so. I'm like, wow, what the fuck?
A few.
Where are the...
Yeah.
Seriously, it's like, it is. It's like Tokyo Rose telling, G.I. Joe that you're going to lose the war because your girlfriend doesn't love you anymore. It's exactly the same shit. And I'm like, wow, that passes as news. But then you've got all these people who don't even watch the news. Everyone's so disengaged and not even aware of their fucking outside world. They're worried about where they can get their eyebrows weaved and their nails done. And
do you know the place? No, I'm kidding.
I do. They're all over the place now. It's all on what's happening in my town. And I'm like, well, if I wanted to look like Kim Kardashian, and maybe I do, but I bought an eyebrow pencil instead. But I'm like, no. I'm going to grow. I'm aging gracefully. I'm going to wear, shades. I'm gonna look like Joe Biden. I'm going to wear, pilot shades and be cool. And wear a baseball hat. Like all the cool people do.
He's going to be here tomorrow.
The money. Say what?
Biden's going to be here tomorrow in Point Loma, where I live in, not just in San Diego, but he's going to be effing here in Point Loma, ruining our traffic.
He's here all the time. And this is like his second home is Chicago. It just disturbs me.
What if it was he was in your neighborhood? That's how it is. Like he's going to be in our stupid neighborhood.
I would probably take the day off because it'd be almost as bad as the bike race they have in my neighborhood. Like they close the streets off.
I hope he uses some of our bike lanes. That would be nice. They're so ridiculous. It's like
our bike lanes here. There's no room for cars at all.
Nice. That's what they're doing here. They're taking away our roads and giving them to bikes.
Yes, and then it's like You just want us to kill people and go to jail, don't you? Yes, you do. Because you built all the jails. You kind of use them.
And it's the stupidest thing. And what they do is, like, they'll also, like, just take away a lane for no reason and not even put a bike lane in. It's just that there were two roads there, you know, last week, and now it's one.
They're demonizing the automobile industry and the great American pastime of getting in the car and cruising. When my mom and dad were kids, they would gather up a quarter between all of their friends, and they'd get a quarter, pull the gas, and go cruising around and do the drag, you know, the American graffiti, drag racing and shit like that, and just driving. There was no TV, anything, and then the books driving for a quarter. And, you know, we don't have that luxury anymore. We don't have, it's just like there's nothing really fun and great to do. And what the government wants is they want more money to address the mental illness issue with children now. That was another story this week. That's why I tuned out. I'm like, I'm so sick of this. You guys are ruining our entire future with this insane bullshit. Fear control, brainwashing, terrorism via the school district and the government and the media and pretending and telling the children that they're fucked up and they're already fucked up and you need mental care. And we're sorry we failed you. And I'm like, wait a minute, they're still kids. What are you doing? It's this whole fucking system of operation, it needs to stop because it's not user-friendly and it's not loving and it's not kind and it's not beneficial and it's not nurturing. It's just all the opposite. And we seem to think that it is like this. I want you to find the YouTube thing to play with. It's the kid that comes to Earth and the little alien comes in and needs to explain what our world is like and what God and the government
What's
is like.
What's it called?
And it's like, I don't know what it's called, but this little guy, it's a cartoon, and this guy comes to Earth as a little alien, and we're trying to explain to him about the government. And he's like, but is the government like a monster? Will it step on you? And they're like, no. Because they can't understand why would you listen to the – why would you be afraid of the government?
Right.
And why would you listen to it? And it's just like – it was so great because it's like, why do we keep listening to these people who think they know better than us how to raise our children and how to be kind and what is good for them, you know? It pisses me off that now the new thing is we need – illness crisis for our children. You know why? Because like they lock down these schools, but they don't call it. It's not lockdown. It's a safe building protocol now because there was a bomb threat. And I'm thinking to myself, why didn't we evacuate that building if there was a bomb threat? We just had these kids in a lockdown, afraid of play. Then this is the worst type of terrorism. And I was like, when are these parents going to wake up to what the fuck? A few of them were like, are they on lockdown? Oh, no, it's safe building protocol. What the fuck is this? But the ministry is fucking, it's going to be all right. We're going to fuck you in the ass all day long. Shh, don't talk. You know, it's like, what are you people doing? And I'm thinking, there was a bomb, but it wasn't, there was nothing to it. It was one of another, there's been a string of fake threats throughout the state. What? We haven't heard anything about this at all. But this is what happened last week. And this was in the high schools. No, it was in every school, actually, in one town. We got like seven towns that we take care of, and one town was all in lockdown. And I'm like, how is it possible to not evacuate? But this is like the new 22nd, you know, I'm like, it's not the 21st century. It's like, you know, the year second. The second cycle of hell we're in now. The new fire drill for schools. Like, well, we still had the bomb, the atomic bomb movies I saw in grade school. I shit you not, in the 70s. But then the fire drills, it was kind of like duck your head out of the, seriously. I was like, okay. it was ridiculous. And he had learned how to stop, drop, and roll, and then you had to walk politely and quietly out of the building for a fire drill stand, you know, X amount of feet away. And it didn't work unless you were all in little straight lines, by the way. You were all going to die if you didn't stand in a straight little line away from the building. That was our fire drill. And now you've got these stay inside, stay in cover, and be in fear of a shooter or a bomb. And it's like, no. Why are you children having mental health issues now? Because look what you're doing to them, you fucking lunatics.
Exactly.
And I'm like, and this is what, you know, we need to, they won't listen to this at the school board meetings.
No, they want to call parents terrorists.
Well, I was going to say, I made sure the house was nice and clean today so that if the FBI comes, I'm not going to be embarrassed, you know, over having bad thoughts against the government on a public
forum.
Okay,
I think I want to switch gears a little bit now and do this, cover this hearing, this House Oversight Committee hearing, where they were discussing the Twitter files. So why is this important? It's important because, you know, government is just not allowed to do this stuff. And when they're, you know, when they're using it to rig elections, it's a really big deal. And I think that, you know, getting the in, you know, we always suspected a lot of stuff has been coming out this week, you know, including this Dr. Naomi Wolf piece that really has given, I guess, me and I think a lot of people validation in their beliefs. We've been gaslighted and, you know, lied to for so many years. And you know, just the fact that we were right about all of it, and it's all coming out in these hearings and, you know, in other places. And basically the government's just admitting this stuff. So now this is, it was a 3-hour hearing.
What is it that the government get caught doing for all of our listeners?
And what is the government, what?
What did they get caught doing?
They got, first of all, stealing elections.
Were they telling the media?
Yeah, they basically.
What to say when we say it, like North Korea style?
Yes, exactly. So they censored, you know, American citizens. The government used social media platforms to censor the citizens, and that's what they did. And that is completely illegal. They're not allowed to do that.
So the illusion of a free press is just an illusion, and it's been blown out of the water, and that's what the Twitter files is about. And I love it.
Yes, pretty much.
And you've got a condensed.
So what I thought is Jimmy Dore, you know, basically went through the same hearing that I did. These are the key pieces. So this is Jimmy Dore covering the key pieces of the trials and the biggest hypocrisies of these hearings. And they're basically, these are horrific Democrats just, you know, trying to bolster as much as possible the reason that people needed to be censored because it's dangerous and all of this stuff, all of the stuff that the left used to be for, now they're completely against in some really awful ways. So there's 4 clips in total, and we're going to start. This is the first one with Jimmy Dore. 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the live stream of the Jimmy Dore Show. We have special guest Aaron Maté is with us.
Super cash.
You know him. He's a New York-based journalist who hosts this show when I'm not here. And he does such a great job, doesn't he? Everybody loves him. He also hosts Pushback for the Gray Zone. He's writing, appears at his Substack at mate.substack.com. And in 2019, Aaron received the prestigious Izzy Award for Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media from Ithaca College, an award he shares with this show. Please welcome Aaron Maté, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so what happened was Matt Taibbi went in front of a congressional committee. It's the Weaponization Subcommittee. Members spar over Twitter files, right? So what the Twitter files and Matt Taibbi and what's the other guy's name? Schellenberg? How do you say his name? Aaron, you know the guy's name.
Michael Schellenberg, yeah.
That's it. So they were tapped by Elon Musk to disseminate, go through, and release the Twitter files, which showed collusion between social media giant Twitter and the government agencies like the FBI and stuff like that, that were requesting people be censored, and them working with them, working with the government to censor private citizens. And if there's a lot of it's very chilling if you actually give a care about First Amendment, freedom, liberty, anything like that, or if you're against authoritarianism and totalitarianism, it's very important because but what happened is now the Democrats, you know, that they're the big conspiracy theorists. There's the Russia people. They're the thing. They're the ones that are doing the censoring. Now, corporate America favors the Democrats. They're the establishment party. They're the Democrats are now the party of the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security. They're FDA, CDC defenders. They defend government now, like corrupt government, instead of fighting it. They're supposed to be the ones fighting all that stuff. They're not. And so now they've tried to turn Matt Taibbi into what's that guy's name?
Schellenberger.
Why can't I remember his name? Michael Schellenberger. They're trying to make those two journalists out to be enemies of the people, the way they said Trump used to do that when Trump was just being rude to Jim Acosta because Jim Acosta was a jackass. Trump never did what these people are doing here. And wait till I show you what they're doing. It will blow your mind. So here is the ranking member, the ranking Democrat on the committee. And there's something interesting about she's from the Virgin Islands. She doesn't get to vote, but she is the ranking member on this committee. So here's how she started it off.
Twitter executives who had actual firsthand knowledge.
She was talking about a hearing that they held a week earlier, talking with Twitter executives, and she's claiming that it didn't go well for the Republicans. That's what she's saying.
About what happened in 2020. And that didn't go so well for the House Republicans because real evidence showed that there wasn't coordination between Twitter and the federal government as they'd like the American people to believe.
So the Democrats, this is really what they're doing. The Democratic Party as a party, their narrative right now is to make you believe what they say instead of what you see. Don't believe your lying eyes. Believe what the Democrats. So if your eyes see the Twitter files, you'll know that the government and the FBI colluded with social media to censor people left and right. And now the Democratic Party's, their whole narrative now is that that didn't happen. That was just normal curation. And the government was suggesting things. So here we go.
And that all the so-called Twitter files really showed was a discussion on content moderation, and that we only got a fraction of the discussion. So now we're back again.
So that's the other Democratic Party talking point. One, it didn't happen. And then B, you're only looking at some of the emails. You're not exposing the rest. That would expose the Republicans. That's the idea, that this is some kind of a partisan witch hunt instead of just Matt Taibbi going through this stuff and revealing what he found, which is what this is. Okay. So that's the two big talking points in the Democratic Party. Okay. That this is, they're cherry picking the stuff that they're releasing, and that it's false, that the government didn't actually try to censor people, and they did. Okay.
No surprise. What else have they got to talk about? Not what's interested in the American people are interested, not what taxpayer dollars have brought us here to Washington to do. And the Republicans have brought in two of Elon Musk's public scribes to release cherry picked out of context emails and screenshots designed to promote his chosen narrative. Elon Musk's chosen narrative that is now being parroted by the Republicans because the Republicans think that these witnesses will tell a story that's going to help them out politically.
So that's what the Democrats has turned this into. They've turned the Twitter files into a partisan thing, and that you can't believe it. Anything Matt Taibbi or even what those emails say, or just like you can't believe the video that Tucker Carlson is showing because of who's showing the video. You can't believe these Twitter files because Matt Taibbi and that Schellenberger guy are somehow compromised and they're not true. Even though they're award-winning journalists, they're somehow compromised. They're not telling you the truth. That's the story. And she's attacking journalists for exposing corruption and malfeasance inside the government. That's the thing they claim Trump did. They're doing it. Who's doing it? The Democrats, from Joe Biden down to her, because who's the lowest Democrat in Congress because she doesn't even get the vote. So from top to bottom, they're pushing this bullshit story.
Tuesday, the majority released an 18-page report claiming to show that the FTC is, quote, harassing Twitter. Oh, my, poor Twitter. Including by seeking information about its interactions with individuals before us today.
So what she just said was that the Federal Trade Commission, what they revealed was the Federal Trade Commission has been harassing Twitter and directing them also and threatening them. And then did you see her response? Oh, poor Twitter. The government is harassing a social media company and threatening them. And their response is, oh, poor social media. Not like we should get to the bottom of this. Okay, here's one more, and then we'll bring in Aaron.
How did the report reach this conclusion? By showing two single paragraphs from a single demand letter, even though the report itself makes clear that there were numerous demand letters with numerous requests, none of which we've been able to see, that are more demand letters and more requests of Twitter. In other words, the conclusions are based on a fraction of information out of context, cherry-picked, surprise, just like the Twitter files. The majority.
So that's the narrative. There it is. So there it is. You can't believe anything you hear about the Twitter files because it's cherry-picked, and these two journalists were handpicked by Elon Musk to go tell you all these lies. And here's where it gets really creepy.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not exaggerating when I say that you have called before you two witnesses who pose a direct threat to people who oppose them.
So let me bring in an actual award-winning journalist, Aaron Maté. That's chilling to me. It's chilling that they're all doing it in unison. It isn't just one person like when they tried to pretend it was Trump doing it. It's the whole party doing it and the media, the corporate media. So go ahead, take it where you want.
He's referring to two journalists who come before Congress to testify about their reporting on Twitter files, actual factual evidence showing major pressure on social media companies like Twitter from intelligence agencies to censor voices they don't like and to spread their own propaganda. And rather than focus on the content of those files, she's trying to, as you talked about, trying to smear the witnesses and calls them a threat. Who are they a threat to? They're a threat to people who support censorship. And because they're exposing censorship, she's threatening them. Because she's telling them that if you try to expose the censorship we support, we're going to smear you and you're going to face consequences. And that's why she's calling them a threat. And it's the lowest of the low. It's so sleazy. And, but yet that was the theme throughout this whole hearing for Democrats.
And here is when she stepped in it and she calls him a so-called journalist here.
And to praise him for his work. This isn't just a matter of what data was given to these so-called journalists before us now.
So she referred to Matt Taibbi and Schellenberger as so-called journalists. So-called. Well, the irony is, and several people pointed this out online, Glenn Greenwald being one of them, Ben Johnson being another, is that this is her. She's a delegate. She's a delegate to the United States House of Representatives. She's not a representative. She's a delegate, and she doesn't get to vote. She's a so-called delegate. This is from the Wikipedia page. She's called a so-called delegate. So there's the irony there, and people are giving it to her, and she has it coming. So Matt Taibbi was given a chance to respond by the next speaker, and here's what he said back to her.
Ranking Member Plaskett, I'm not a so-called journalist. I've won the National Magazine Award, the I.F. Stone Award for Independent Journalism, and I've written 10 books, including four New York Times bestsellers.
So that was he was given a chance to respond, and there's his, I'm not a so-called journalist. I'm an award-winning journalist. I have four best-selling books, New York Times bestsellers. And then he added, it looks like I've lost your vote, ranking member. Oh, wait, you're a delegate from the Virgin Islands, so you don't get a vote. Now, what's that you were saying about me being a so-called journalist again? She's a so-called Congress member. So, they're trying to make it like Matt Taibbi is some kind of he's just ripping on Democrats and he's just there as a partisan hack tool of a billionaire. But again, he's made this point over and over that this isn't left-right party. He says this.
Again, Ranking Member Plaskett, I would note that the evidence of Twitter government relationship includes lists of tens of thousands of names on both the left and right. The people affected include Trump supporters, but also left-leaning sites like Consortium and Truthout, the leftist South American channel Telesur, the Yellow Vest Movement, that in fact is a key point of the Twitter files, that it's neither a left nor right issue.
And but that's all that the Democrats can do. So that's how they're going to position it on CNN and MSNBC, that this is a left-right issue and that Matt Taibbi and Elon Musk are just have it in for the Democrats and that nothing happened. There's nothing to see here. And these guys are just political hacks. They're doing that to journalism, to real facts and journalism. Let me bring back in Aaron. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. Well, Jimmy, so the reason why Democrats and their media cheerleaders can ignore comments like Matt there that he just played, where he talks about how the censorship and silencing has also been directed against leftist sites like Telesur, Truthout, and Consortium News, is that Democrats don't care about sites like Telesur and Consortium
News. That's right.
Because Consortium News actually challenges power and actually challenges the national security state. And all those people who identify as being on the left, who are trying to minimize the reporting Matt is doing here, they don't challenge power themselves. They don't actually challenge a national security state. So that's, they don't care if a site like Consortium News, which actually does, is silenced because they don't consider that site as being a part of their club. So that makes it, so they just ignore that and try to make this a partisan thing, right? And try to pretend as if Matt Taibbi is serving some kind of Republican narrative. It's not Matt Taibbi's fault that Democrats have embraced not just censorship, but deranged conspiracy theories, like the conspiracy theory that Russia was somehow behind Hunter Biden's laptop, or that Russia was conspiring with and blackmailing Trump. When we were challenging that, yes, we were challenging a conspiracy theory that was unfairly aimed at Trump, but we weren't doing that to defend Trump. We were doing that because it was a dumb conspiracy theory that was very dangerous and served a whole bunch of nefarious ends. And that's the part that these people can't grasp. So it's not Matt Taibbi's fault that Republicans are taking advantage of this issue, is because Democrats have given them that gift because they're pro-censorship. So the answer to all this is not to attack Matt Taibbi for reporting on it. It's to try to pressure Democrats to stop supporting censorship and stop supporting deranged conspiracy theories like the ones that we've been challenging.
So that's the Democrats' answer to actual reporting that exposes malfeasance inside the government and censorship. That's their response. Do you see there's nobody looking out for you, okay? And the Republicans who are exposing this, I'm thankful that they are, the Republican chairman, and they're calling these hearings, they're also doing it for political partisan reasons. That's the thing. They also are trying to make it a left-right issue. That's all they have. Because they all work for the same people. At the end of the day, they all work for the same people. And so the Republicans will use this to the effect that it helps them politically. But they really aren't going to go after the FBI. They're not really going to go after the intelligence community. They're not going to do any of that stuff. They're not going to act. There's not going to be any real reforms, I don't think, from any. Do you think there'll be any reforms from this, Aaron?
Yeah, if I were making a bet, I'd say I doubt it. But as you say, it's better than nothing to at least have these hearings. These hearings get facts out to the public.
Yeah, that's
and these hearings also expose how bankrupt and dishonest intellectually these people are who are trying to support censorship. I mean, look at the behavior of these Democrats here. One after another, they expose themselves as unhinged McCarthyites, and that's a public service to expose that.
If you want to see my stand-up special, become a member at jimmydore.com. It's only $10, and come see our live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, Palm Springs, Milwaukee, St. Paul, Honolulu, Northampton, Massachusetts, Syracuse, Cohoes, New York, Hartford, and more.
Okay, so what did you think about that?
I want to know who the hell this Matt Taibbi is. Because I thought, how many times are you going to repeat this man's name? My phone fell into sync during the beginning of this. So I missed a bit of it.
Oh, okay.
The first part.
So Matt Taibbi was a journalist for the Rolling Stones magazine for a decade. He was one of the leading voices against Trump, okay?
printed article after article about, you know, tyranny and fascism and all the whole, you know, the whole left thing. But what he's arguing against is that is the censorship period.
Yeah, right and left.
And Elon Musk chose him to go through the Twitter files, and what he found was mind-blowing.
Well, to those who think that there's no one standing on a little stool behind the curtain, it's mind-blowing. But for the rest of us, it's like, we've seen this, and it's so cute to watch them do this huge
song and
awakening
dance.
You know, it's kind of funny. I remember when Rolling Stones was just, you know, witty humor, and it wasn't like a journalistic magazine, but it seemed to somehow turn into one when we had our rock star president. That was disconcerting. And it's so funny that they... You might as well have had Mad Magazine, you know, is a news source too. But they went in that direction, and what do you expect? Do you expect that there's any credible reporting when, you know, no one could call out that the emperor had no clothes? And if you did, you
right.
were gone. And the one who was, and this was with, I think, oh my God, was it with? Bush, the stupid, get rid of that little old woman who had been around for decades because he was getting uncomfortable questions after he had the shoe thrown at him, after his walls were tumbling down? Or was it Obama?
I don't know.
But anyways, that was the first sign. She was the canary. That we're all dying as far as the voices of critical thinking are not allowed. And that was the beginning of the end.
Right. Now I'm going to play, one more clip. So I actually have four clips downloaded, but I think I'm only going to play one more. We'll see. We'll see. But this one actually, like they talk about, one thing that is, you know, I think the most chilling out of all of them is censoring COVID information, whether it's true or not. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and this
mm-hmm.
is what in the hearing and one of the people that, you know, this is just part of the hearing that comes out. And I'd like to play that one. I just posted it in the chat. And then,
I don't know. I just think it's cute that they think that anybody did take the news seriously. You know, when they have to tell you that it's fair and balanced, and it's almost like, it's good for you. Watch us with CNN. I don't know that many people... Exactly. That anybody even watches the damn news anymore. I don't know. It's something else. But it is... It's a blessing that... I mean, really, when you think about it, how much worse could it get? You know, are they gonna come and actually make sure that you are reading the government sponsored pamphlet that they put on your doorstep in the morning, and make sure that did you take our test? Is it going?
Yeah,
it's going in that direction. You know,
if they had it their way, that's what would happen. Let me just play this other one, and if we feel like going into more, we can. But here we go, 3, 2, 1.
Here's the story. So this is another great part of this story, that they're uncovering unbelievable malfeasance and intimidation and censorship by the government, which works for corporations and billionaires. And here's another one. Listen, this should be jaw-dropping to you.
Just quickly, we found just yesterday a tweet from the Virality Project at Stanford, which is partnered with a number of government agencies on Twitter.
So they found an email from this NGO, non-government organization, at a college, but they're actually getting funded by the government. So they're basically the government. They're doing the government's work because they're getting money from the government, and they're working with the government to censor. And here's what he found out.
Where they talk explicitly about censoring stories of true vaccine side effects, and other true stories that they felt encouraged hesitancy. Now, the important...
It says from true.
Yeah, so they used the word true three times in this email. And what's notable about this is that it reflects the fundamental misunderstanding of this whole disinformation complex, anti-disinformation complex. They believe that ordinary people can't handle difficult truths. And so they think that they need minders to separate out things that are controversial or difficult for them. And that's, again, that's totally contrary to what America is all about, I think.
I'll just briefly.
So what he's saying is they found out that this group working in conjunction with the government to censor, there was an email where it said, hey, we want you to censor stuff about the vaccine, even if it's true. In fact, we want you to censor true stuff about the vaccine because it'll create vaccine hesitancy. So they get to decide. And what he's just said there is that what I've said here is like they think you are too dumb to handle misinformation or even accurate information, and you need someone else to pre-read it. Someone else who has some kind of superpower because it won't affect them, but they can stop it before it affects the rest of us because we're so mush-brained, we can't handle it. But they have handpicked people who can handle all kinds of information apparently, and it doesn't affect them. But it affects us because we're so mush-brained and stupid. And he's saying that they don't want people to even know accurate information. Aaron, what would you like to say about that?
No, that's exactly right. It reveals the contempt these people have for their voters, that they feel as if they don't have the capacity to make up decisions for themselves. And so that's why we have to keep information from them. And what they're actually really afraid about is that when people learn the truth, they won't go along with the policies and the interests of power. And so they want to keep the truth from them, and they pretend that we have to do this to protect them from themselves and from disinformation. It's all done as a racket to justify ruling over people and censoring the information that they don't like.
So that should be chilling to people. That and I've seen the email. It's in his Twitter thread of them saying, we don't want accurate, true stories about vaccine injuries. We don't want accurate, true stories about the fact. They wanted to censor truth, and they just say it. And here's, I think this is the last one I'll show. So there's this guy, Daniel Goldman. He's a representative. I think he's from New York. And he grew up, he's a rich kid. He's one of those guys who wants power now. He can't really accomplish anything on his own. And so he was an asshole to those two reporters, Michael Schellenberg and Matt Taibbi, and he wanted them to admit that Russiagate was real, and they wouldn't. And then at the end, he said that there's no emails from the Biden administration asking for a censorship, and here's how Jim Jordan, the chairman of the committee, handles it.
And even with Twitter, you cannot find actual evidence of any direct government censorship of any lawful speech.
So again, these are people not upset at the malfeasance of the government and social media and the FBI and they're not upset at that. They're upset that you're even saying that something's wrong. That's what they're upset. You can't find any conclusive evidence, which there's nothing but evidence, but here's.
And when I say lawful, I mean non-criminal speech, because plenty of speech is non-criminal.
I'll give you one. Gentlemen's time to expire. I'd ask unanimous consent to enter into the record the following email from Clark Humphrey, Executive Office of the Presidency, White House Office, January 23rd, 2021. That's the Biden administration, 4:39 a.m. Hey, folks. This goes to Twitter. Hey, folks. Wanted to use the term Mr. Goldman just used. Wanted to flag the below tweet, and I'm wondering if we can get moving on the process for having it removed ASAP.
Boom.
That is.
Could you read the?
So there you go.
Okay.
That it was from January 23rd at 4:30 in the morning or something like that. So I don't know what Biden's been president for like 5 seconds, and they're already sending emails asking for censorship. And Glenn Greenwald says that's Dan Goldman, just elected to Congress from Manhattan, is the perfect symbol of the Democratic Party. The heir to the billionaire Levi Strauss fortune, unearned net worth of $250 million went to D.C. Sidwell and friends, Yale and Stanford, worked for the Mueller investigation, and now he does that. He worked for the Mueller investigation, and now he's in government with power. Anything you'd like
Jimmy,
to say?
You know, I think I don't think he worked for Mueller. He did work. He was the lead Democratic impeachment lawyer during Trump's first impeachment when Trump got impeached after he briefly paused some weapons to Ukraine.
Oh, okay. So
Goldman.
Okay.
I don't think he was on the Mueller team, but honestly, he was on something just as
horrific.
Dangerous
mm-hmm.
because recall that impeachment set the tone or helped set the tone for Democrats to normalize political culture in which we have to criminalize diplomacy with Russia and we have to use Ukraine for a proxy war against Russia. That's when Adam Schiff got up on the House floor and said, the United States aids Ukraine so that we can fight Russia over there. We don't have to fight Russia here. And so Dan Goldman was a big part of that because he was their lead impeachment lawyer. And that's when they were bringing people like Alexander Vindman to talk about how we needed to keep using Ukraine as a proxy against Russia. And that helped bring us to the moment that we're in right now. So Dan Goldman is a neocon Democrat. And as Glenn said, inherited a fortune of something like $250 million. And on top of that really funny moment with Jim Jordan, there was, as you mentioned, this moment where Goldman is trying to get Taibbi to basically pledge loyalty to Robert Mueller's findings and say, do you dare challenge the indictments that Robert Mueller made against a Russian troll farm and against alleged Russian hackers? And Goldman wouldn't let Taibbi answer, but one of the things Taibbi was trying to say is that Mueller dropped one of those indictments. So how can you expect to like pledge blind loyalty to one of these indictments if even Mueller dropped one of them? Because the troll farm actually challenged that case in court.
Yeah.
Rather than that case, Mueller just dropped it and ran away. On top of the fact that unless you live in a dictatorship, it's okay to challenge the government when they put claims inside an indictment. It doesn't mean it's gospel. But Dan Goldman is revealing himself to be an authoritarian who believes you shouldn't challenge the holy state when it puts some claims inside an indictment. That's who the Democrats are now.
Do you want to see the tweet that they're referring to that was so the tweet he's referring to here?
And even with Twitter, you cannot find actual evidence of any direct government censorship of any lawful speech. And when I say lawful, I mean non-criminal speech, because plenty of lunch is non-criminal.
I'll give you gentlemen's time to expire. I'd ask unanimous consent to enter into the record the following email from Clark Humphrey, Executive Office of the Presidency, White House Office, January 23rd, 2021. That's the Biden administration, 4:39 a.m. Hey, folks. This goes to Twitter. Hey, folks, wanted to use the term Mr. Goldman just used. Wanted to flag the below tweet, and I'm wondering if we can get moving on the process for having it removed ASAP.
Boom.
That is.
Could you read the below tweet?
And then if we can keep an eye out for tweets that fall in this same genre, that would be great. This is a tweet on the very issue that Thomas
can you
Matthew brought.
For the fullness of the record, can you read the – because I've not seen this. Can you read the tweet that it's referencing?
I don't have the tweet here with me. But the gentleman's point was you said no time did government try to tell Twitter to take that – to explicitly remove something. And
no, I said explicitly remove lawful speech. Lawful speech. We're going to conflate. The First Amendment is not absolute.
Twitter, this is something from Robert Kennedy Jr.
So he's trying to say that it was an unlawful speech that they took down. Want to know what it was? Here's the tweet. The tweet is from RFK Jr., and it says, Hank Aaron's tragic death is part of a wave of suspicious death amongst elderly closely following administration of the COVID vaccine. He received the Moderna vaccine on January 5th to inspire other Black Americans to get the vaccine. That's what they wanted taken down, and that's what that guy thinks is unlawful. That's against the law. Now, what do you think of that, Aaron? Let me bring in a real journalist.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's Dan Goldman right there revealing himself to be the authoritarian that he is, that now he has the right to decide what is lawful speech or not. A tweet from Robert F. Kennedy about vaccines that he doesn't like. Who is he to decide whether that's lawful speech or not? But that's the mentality of these people. That they're the arbiters of information.
How is that possibly unlawful speech? It threatens. It's not a physical threat of violence. It's not a threat to try to get people to commit violence. It's not threatening anyone. It's not planning a crime. It's not any of that. It's just words. So there's no way that that's unlawful.
Yeah, it's only unlawful in the minds of an authoritarian, and that's what people like Dan Coleman are.
Yeah. All right, well, Aaron, that's it for today. I really appreciate you you coming on and lending your expertise. I didn't know that you were somehow involved with the Twitter files, so that's interesting.
I mean, again, I'm not playing a very big role, but I have.
No, you're playing a big role. You have really your fingers in all of this.
No, I don't. I've been talking to Matt about it. And
if anybody's
and
responsible, you are. That's what I say. And, well, how's Matt Taibbi? I bet he's taking it all in stride, right?
Of course he is. And it's a tribute to the work he's done that this is the response it generated, just McCarthyite, unhinged attacks. And look at him. If you watch him during that hearing, he's trying to maintain his composure in all these really vicious attacks. And he did a great job at it. He didn't let them get to him and try to provoke him. And it was a sad display on their part. I mean, it's humiliating. If I were in Congress, I'd be embarrassed at the Democrats' behavior. It's humiliating for them.
And the thing is that other journalists came at him for telling the truth, just like I had that happen. David Sirota, Brian Grimm, when they lied about me and lied about forced to vote and lied about McCarthy becoming speaker and all that stuff. Sirota lied about that, not Grimm, but so that's the weird feeling when even other journalists, right? Here I am telling the truth about politicians and force the vote and using our leverage, and here comes along a guy like David Sirota to try to gaslight me and try to discredit me, like I was lying about it. And so I know that feeling that Matt Taibbi is going through. It happens to me all the time. It happens to you all the time. It happens to Max. It happens to anybody who's doing actually telling the truth about the powerful. It's going to happen, right?
Yeah, and we can expect plenty more of it.
Yeah. All right, everybody check out Aaron Mate at matesubstack.com. Is that what it is?
Yeah, matesubstack.com and thegrayzone.com.
Okay. All right, Aaron, now give me a smile before you leave. You look sad. All right?
It's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, can't wait to have you back in the studio, hopefully soon. If you want to see my stand-up special, become a member at jimmydore.com. It's only $10, and come see our live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, Palm Springs, Milwaukee, St. Paul, Honolulu, Northampton, Massachusetts, Syracuse, Cohoes, New York, Hartford, and more.
Okay. Just real quick, Mom is with us on the road, and we have a caller. So hello, caller. If you want to be a part of the show, please press 1. If not, welcome. So, Elizabeth, what did you think about that one?
I'm not going to try to talk because Nala is
as bad. So, okay. Well, and on that note, our caller just pushed 1, so let's let them in. Hello.
Hi, Daniel. Hi, Elizabeth. How's life? How's everything? I think you spoke yesterday at the meeting. When I hear about the Russia stuff, when I hear about the Russian bot stuff, it brings me back fuzzy memories, doesn't it, Daniel? Doesn't it bring back fuzzy memories for us?
Yes.
I got to get my Russian dolls and all that, just line them up and start playing with them again. And drink some Russian vodka later. But anyhow, it just goes to show you who's really powerful in this company when some crazy lady can throw a temper tantrum for 7 years. And this is where we're still at.
Right. You know. Another clip that I might play now that you're with us is one with, I don't know if you saw it or not, but the Debbie Wasserman Schultz one that is just...
Oh, my God. Why is she still alive?
I thought she was dead, honestly. I thought, you know...
I know.
Can't
you just go to Israel and just, like, live life? Like, what the... Just go to, like, fucking Tel Aviv or something and just... All right, let's play the clip. Why not?
Okay. All right, let's see. I think it's this one. There's one second. Ramen here. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Here is my favorite. Here is Debbie Wasserman Schultz at the hearing Now, let's remember what this is about. Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, they revealed malfeasance inside and a collusion of Twitter with the FBI and other government agencies to censor Americans' free speech. And that should be a huge story. But, of course, it's not to the Democrats and the corporate media because they're owned by the same billionaires who want to censor you. They don't want the truth to be known about the wars. They don't want the truth to be known about COVID or the lockdowns or the vaccines or anything or about Russiagate or the January 6th. And they don't want the truth about anything to get out. That's what they have as narrative control. And here's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She gets, you remember her? Okay, you remember who she's the corrupt? Mm-hmm. She used to run the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016. She had to step down. I don't know if you're for. I'll tell you in a second. But here's her starting.
I want to ask about journalistic ethics and information sources. The Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics asserts that journalists should have.
So she wants to talk about ethics. Debbie Wasserman Schultz wants to talk about who better to talk about ethics than the person who got caught rigging the 2016 primary so badly that she had to step down. She got fired from the head of the DNC. Debbie Wasserman Schultz to resign as DNC chair as email scandal rocks the Democrats. Huh. Wow. Noted ethics expert Debbie Wasserman Schultz is worried about ethics with Matt Taibbi. And if you'd believe that, I've got a Russiagate theory to sell you. So here,
Jimmy,
yeah,
how
ahead.
Did Debbie Wasserman Schultz respond to being exposed as being corrupt and rigging the primary against Bernie? Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Democrats responded by blaming Russia. And that's the playbook they've been following ever since. Any scrutiny of their corruption, of their wrongdoing, is deflected by just blaming Russia. That's the exact same playbook here.
So here, let's listen to this garbage. This I'll play it through, and here we go.
Mr. Taibbi, I want to ask about journalistic ethics and information sources. The Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics asserts that journalists should avoid political activities that can compromise integrity or credibility. Being a Republican witness today certainly casts a cloud over your objectivity. But a deeper concern that I have relates to the ethics of how journalists receive and present certain information. Journalists should avoid accepting spoon-fed, cherry-picked information if it's likely to be slanted, incomplete, or designed to reach a foregone, easily disputed, or invalid conclusion. Would you agree with that?
I think it depends.
Really? You wouldn't agree that a journalist should avoid spoon-fed, cherry-picked information if it's likely to be slanted, incomplete, or designed to reach a foregone, easily disputed, or invalid conclusion?
Congresswoman, I've done probably a dozen stories involving whistleblowers. Every reported story that I've ever done across three decades involves sources who have motives. Every time you do a story, you're making a balancing test between the public
interest. Reclaiming my time. Thank you very much.
So he's starting to explain to her how journalism works. And often when a whistleblower comes forward, it's because they have an axe to grind with somebody. And so that you have to take what they're saying with a grain of salt, but you still report the information. That's what he's saying. And you have to balance it. That's what he's saying. Okay. And she doesn't want to hear that. Because, again, the narrative is that he was handed this story, not that he curated it himself inside Twitter, that Elon Musk gave him access to anything. It's that Elon Musk limited his scope of what he could see, and he handed him this certain narrative that Elon Musk, that's what she's trying to push, and that's why she's going to bring up Joe Rogan.
I ask you this because before you became Elon Musk's hand-picked journalist, and pardon the oxymoron, you stated this on Joe Rogan's podcast.
So they don't call him a journalist. They're still doing that. So their whole thing is to slander and smear and discredit. Do you see this, the game? Do you see that? Okay.
Ask about being spoon-fed information, and I quote, I think that's true of any kind of journalism, and you'll see it behind me here. I think that's true of any kind of journalism. Once you start getting handed things, then you've lost. They have you at that point, and you got to get out of that habit. You just can't cross that line.
So she's trying to say that that's what happened. So he said this on Joe Rogan. She's trying to say, well, didn't you just do this with Elon Musk and Twitter, this thing that you claimed you can't do? You can't just get handed things like you got handed a story by Elon Musk. That's the implication. Now, we're going to give you the reveal in a second, but watch this.
Do you still believe what you told Mr. Rogan? Yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes.
Good. Now, you crossed that line with the Twitter files.
No.
Elon Musk, it's my time. Please do not interrupt me. Elon Musk spoon-fed you his cherry-picked information, which you must have suspected promotes a slanted viewpoint, or at the very least generates another right-wing conspiracy theory. You violated your own standard, and you appear to have benefited from it. Before the release of emails in August of last...
So she doesn't want him to explain that quote. She just clips that quote from Joe Rogan and acts like it means exactly what she wants it to mean. Now, we're going to show you in a second it doesn't. But now she's going to go into, again, this is the thing, he's trying to discredit these journalists. She's not going after the facts that they revealed. She's going after, she's at a personal witch hunt, character assassination. That's all they have. And so that's what she's going to try to do now. She's going to say that Matt Taibbi reporting this stuff, he's doing it only for money. Even though everybody else gets a paycheck in the world and every other journalist at every other place does the exact same thing that Matt Taibbi does. You publish things, and you hope it gets attention. Okay, here we go.
Here, you had 661,000 Twitter followers. After the Twitter files, your followers doubled, and now it's three times what it was last August. I imagine your Substack readership, which is a subscription, increased significantly because of the work that you did for Elon Musk.
Hey, you broke a story that's super important, and now people became aware of it, and you. That's supposed to be bad. According to her, she makes that out to be a negative thing. You're supposed to report a story, and no one's supposed to find out about it, and no one's supposed to know that you reported it, and no one's supposed to want to follow you because you wrote that story. And if they do, if your story is successful and it gets passed around and a lot of people want to read it and a lot of people get informed by it and then a lot of people want to read more, that's bad. That means you're a bad journalist. That's what she's literally saying right now. Okay.
Jimmy, the only acceptable way,
okay, go
the
ahead.
Only acceptable way to make the only acceptable way to make money in journalism, according to Deborah Wasserman Schultz's logic, is to be, you know, a host on MSNBC or some other outlet and get paid to parrot Democratic Party talking point and spread Russiagate propaganda. So Rachel Maddow, who gets paid more than $30 million a year to do 1 hour a week spreading Russiagate, whatever else the Democratic Party wants it to, that's the legitimate way to make money in journalism. Not the reporter like Matt Taibbi who breaks a story and gets an audience for it. Like, it's his fault that people want to read his story. Should he not want his following to increase? Is he supposed to live in a hut and only share it with a small number of people? And the reason why his following increased, because he exposed a major scandal that exposes people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's why people are interested. And she's mad that happened.
Figure on it, but it's quite obvious that you've profited from the Twitter files. You hit the jackpot on that Vegas slot machine to which you referred. That's true, isn't it?
I've also reinvested.
You've made No. Is it true that you have profited since you were the recipient of the Twitter files? You've made money. Yes or no?
Have you made money since you? What? Everybody gets a paycheck. What are you talking about? Have you made money? So now, just making money at what you do for a living is now a sign that you're corrupt and not to be listened to. What? Where did she pull this out of her asshole from? I guess that's where she pulled it out of her asshole.
Very simple.
It's probably a wash, honestly.
No, you have made money that you did not have before, correct?
But I've also spent money that I didn't have before. I just hired a whole group of people to do
it. Patently obvious answer, reclaiming my time. Attention is a powerful drug. Eyeballs, money, prominence, attention, all of it points to problems with accuracy and credibility. And the larger point, which is social media companies are not biased against conservatives. And if anything, they ignored their own policies by allowing Trump and other MAGA extremists to post incessant lies, endangering public safety, and even our democracy. Hypocrisy is the hangover of an addiction to attention. Now, I want to point out another alleged finding on the Twitter files. Mr. Schellenberger, you've referenced several times this $3.4 million that the FBI paid to Twitter in 2020 that was referenced in General Counsel Jim Baker's email. I first want to confirm that nowhere in the email does Baker say that the money was paid to censor information, take down posts, suspend accounts, or do anything relating to content moderation. Is that correct?
It is.
So what she's trying to say is that the FBI giving Twitter, a social media company, millions of dollars and then requesting censorship, that those two things aren't connected. That FBI just decided to give a couple millions of dollars to Twitter out of the goodness of their hearts. And it was for something else. It wasn't because they wanted influence and tell them what to do. That's what she's trying to pretend that right now. And what she's going to get, she doesn't see the real answer coming, and she's going to get egg on her face. Here we go.
Thank you. But honest reporting would have explained that the $3.4 million was paid to release information, not censor it. One of my colleagues on this panel repeated your distortions and told Americans this reimbursement was used to, quote, censor certain stories. That's a flat-out lie. Mr. Schellenberger, are you aware of Section 2706 under the Stored Communications Act? It says when social media companies comply with subpoenas, warrants, or court orders, it costs them money, so they get reimbursed. The FBI makes these requests and reimbursements to discover evidence and run relevant to a criminal investigation. Let me repeat that. The FBI makes these requests to help catch the bad guys. That helps keep child predators off social media sites. It helps keep violent criminals off our streets. I support the FBI and our law enforcement agencies. It would be nice if our Republican colleagues did the same and not fabricate explanations for payments that are defined for clear purposes in federal law. My time is just about wrapped up.
May I respond?
The truth is that social media companies are unregulated monoliths. They pose danger to individuals. They allow posts that bring harm, and that's the bottom line.
Posts are free speech is bad, and that's the bottom line. Social media allow posts, meaning free speech, that harms, and that's bad, and we got to get rid of free speech. She's letting the cat out of the bag. And that's kind of remarkable that she said that, right, Aaron, right at the end?
I mean, it's so revealing. It's not surprising. And she's revealing just how much contempt she has for freedom of speech, which is supposed to be a core value in the U.S. And she's mad at these two journalists for exposing the censorship that she supports. And, of course, you know, she would never have a hearing where they drag in every host on MSNBC and grill them for profiting off of spreading the most deranged and dangerous conspiracy theory in recent memory, which is that the president of the U.S. was a Russian asset. They would never come in and grill them for that because they support those conspiracy theories and they support the grifting and the profiteering that was made off of that.
And so now she concludes and watch what happens.
The other side will not tell you. I yield back the balance of my time.
Generally had no time to yield back, but I will let the gentleman, Mr. Schellenberger, respond. And I would also point out that I did not say what the FBI paid Twitter for. All I said was they paid Twitter $3.4 million.
Mr. Chairman, point of order, I didn't ask Mr. Schellenberger a question.
Yeah, but the witness wants to respond, and the witness have been invited to our guests, and frankly, they've been attacked by the federal government.
Well, please do that.
I'm going to let Mr. Schellenberger answer that before recognizing Mr. Bishop.
So are you going to do that as we move down the line of questioners?
The gentleman has not been recognized. You had your 5 minutes, and frankly, I think that's at the discretion of the chair. Mr. Schellenberger, you can respond briefly.
I'll be brief, which is that my understanding from those files is that Twitter had decided not to take that money until recently. So if you read that email, what Stasha, I believe, the person that sent it, is saying is that they started taking money after previously not taking it. And I believe that the reason that they had not taken it earlier was because they did not want that financial conflict clouding their relationship.
Chairman,
Boy, Debbie Wasserman Schultz did not want him to say that because it just revealed her to be completely full of shit. And so what he just said was that, yeah, that is actually a conflict of interest. They knew it was a conflict of interest to take millions of dollars from the FBI while they were requesting censorship. And that's why they didn't take that money for a long time, up until very recently. And so she got egg on her face. She didn't. And isn't it scary that they don't want people to talk? They don't want him to give a rebuttal. You talk about authoritarian. That's not Trump doing that. That's your Democratic sweethearts doing that. It's your Democratic Party sweethearts. So let me just see if this is the end of that.
It is payment under federal law so that they can.
The gentleman from North Carolina, Mr. Bishop, is recognized for.
So she just keeps trying. Remember, she knows how the rules work, except when it comes to her. It's my time. That's how the rules work, except she can talk whenever she wants. So Matt Taibbi, actually, the next guy, gives him a chance to respond. And here's what he says.
Care to respond to the attack on your ethics? You weren't given really an opportunity to answer. And if you'd be brief, I've got a bunch of stuff I want to ask you as well.
Sure. Just quickly, that moment on the Joe Rogan show, I was actually recounting a section from Seymour Hersh's book, Reporter, where he...
So now you remember the part where Debbie Wasserman Schultz says to him, hey, you said you shouldn't be handed stories, and when you're doing that, that's bad. Remember that? She acted like he was talking. This is the context. Here it is.
Described a scene where the CIA gave him a story, and he was very...
So she's talking... Here, I'll go back.
Care to respond to the attack on your ethics? You weren't given really an opportunity to answer. And if you'd be brief, I've got a bunch of stuff I want to ask you as well.
Sure, just quickly, that moment on the Joe Rogan show, I was actually recounting a section from Seymour Hersh's book, Reporter, where he described a scene where the CIA gave him a story, and he was very uncomfortable. He said that I, who had always gotten the secrets, was being handed the secrets. Look, again, I've done lots of whistleblower stories. There's always a balancing test that you make when you're given material, and you're always balancing newsworthiness versus the motives of your sources. In this case, the newsworthiness clearly outweighed any other considerations, and I think everybody else who worked on the project agreed.
So that totally 100% different meaning to those words that Debbie Wasserman Schultz clipped and quoted out of context. So when you put it in context, it has a totally different meaning. And so Matt Taibbi gave that. So what that again reveals is that the Democratic Party, the Democrats, aren't interested in free speech. They're not interested in stopping government malfeasance. They're not interested in stopping censorship. In fact, the exact opposite. They're willing to slander and smear in the most underhanded ways journalists who are telling truths and exposing corruption inside the government. They're willing to do that to them. That's what this is revealing. And do you want to see how that got reported? Here's how hacks report that stuff. So there's this guy, Aaron Rupar, just, you know, there's no bigger hack in the world. And he says, Wasserman Schultz, so this is the way he reports that what just happened. Journalists should avoid accepting spoon-fed, cherry-picked information if it's likely to be slanted. You would agree with that? Taibbi, I think it depends. Wasserman Schultz, really? Plays clip of Taibbi basically agreeing with the premise of her question on Rogan's pod. That's like he's supposed to be owning Taibbi on that. That's not what happened. Here's Sam Sex says, laugh my ass off at Taibbi getting bodied by Debbie Wasserman Schultz of all people. Well, that's because he didn't get bodied, Sam. That's why it's not. Here's Aaron Matze said, in claiming that Debbie Wasserman Schultz bodied Matt Taibbi, you failed to add his response, where he explains the context for that quote, Cy Hurst talking about the CIA, and explaining that the Twitter files are clearly in public interest. Do you think they're not? No, that guy didn't respond to you.
No, he did respond.
Oh, he did? He did respond. Go ahead.
No, but who cares?
Right.
The point is he's gloating over Debbie Wasserman Schultz bodying Taibbi and not, of course, showing what Taibbi said in response. And the question is, do you think that these files are in the public interest or not? And this guy who I got in this spat with, he didn't give a direct answer to that question because he can't answer that question because he knows they're in the public interest, but they don't want to admit that for whatever reason. But they are. Anyone who denies that they're not in the public interest is then a fan of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who doesn't think it's in the public interest to expose intelligence agencies having a role in censoring people and spreading their own propaganda on social media.
And isn't it chilling that other journalists are doing this to Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberg? Isn't that the real chilling part? Sure. Okay. Congress people, hired hacks, the servants of the billionaire class, the biggest liars in the world, politicians, of course, but other journalists are doing this? Isn't this is like Third Reich territory? Am I wrong?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's two aspects to it, or two main ones. And I should disclose here, Jimmy, that I started working a little bit with Matt on these Twitter files. I'm not doing too much because I have to focus on other stuff. But I've been involved somewhat in the work he's doing now. So I should disclose that in talking about this. But I think there's two things. One is there are people who just identify with the Democratic Party, like Aaron Rupar, the guy who just clips videos all day long in the service of Democratic Party interests, right? But then there's also people who identify on the left, or whatever, who are just jealous of Matt Taibbi's accomplishments. I think he's been reporting for a very long time. He's done a lot. He's written multiple books, as he talked about, in defense of the attack on his character. He's won multiple awards. He's had an impact, and he's been productive. He actually does reporting. He does work. I think there's an element here of just petty jealousy by people who want to knock him down, who just can't celebrate the work he's done.
I like what Jose Vega, our previous guest, said. He said, I don't know how Matt Taibbi can handle sitting there while being unfairly attacked, but kudos to him. None of those Democrats should ever be taken seriously again when it comes to journalism. They all fed into the and promoted Russiagate as legitimate for over 4 years. You want to see my stand-up special, become a member at jimmydore.com. It's only $10, and come see our live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, Palm Springs, Milwaukee, St. Paul, Honolulu, Northampton, Massachusetts, Syracuse, Cohoes, New York, Hartford, and more.
Okay, first I just have to get out of the way that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is see you next Tuesday. You know, just, I can't stand her. I just think she's the lowest of the low. So
what is wrong with you?
Oh, God, I hate her.
Honey, anyone that can talk that fast, you've got to admire.
Well, no, we did it on double speed so that we could get through it faster. But our hair looks like ramen.
Don't cut my tongue out before I'm done lying. Yeah. I can't believe she's not in jail. That's what I can't believe.
I know.
Her,
I know.
Or working on CNN with Donna Brazile. I can't believe it.
Well, CNN, right?
But what do you think, Art?
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is just par for the fucking course, isn't it? I mean, look at how they've been censoring social media since 2016. You know, before, if you made a post that mattered, you used to get like 2,000 likes, 2,000 reactions. Now it's a miracle if you get 100. I mean,
right.
So this is, like I said, this is just WS and the Clintons throwing temper tantrums, you know, a decade-long temper tantrum. That's all this is. And for the normies and NPCs that still watch the news and take it seriously, well, I'm not really sure you can save them anyway. At this point, they either can, you know, save themselves or, well, you know.
Well, sort of, except they're the majority. They are the majority, though. Really quick, this is breaking news. Mom and I had a discussion about this on Friday, on Friday, that there was a bank shut down in Silicon Valley, right? Well, just now, regulators shut down second bank in race to contain fallout from Silicon Valley collapse. So,
now, which bank was that?
That was, I took two screenshots, so hold on.
Silicon Valley Bank, I believe.
SVB. The first one was SVB, and that was...
Yeah, that's Silicon Valley Bank, yeah.
The second one was New York Signature.
Oh, my God, this is worse than I thought. Okay, well, pray. Make sure that you are good with your friends, because they're the only ones that are going to take care of you now. I'm gonna
tell
you
what. I got chicken.
Like,
we're good.
I know. And I'm good at orchestrating. I can let you know what you're doing wrong. I was just thinking, I gotta learn how to make beer or find someone who can, you know, has a still for some bourbon, because things are gonna get rough pretty soon. Seriously. Now, in 2008, when they had the big bailout, that was when, and they made the movie about it, Too Big to Fail, for anybody who doesn't really think that these are real things, they stopped the Great Depression from happening. And the tsunami is so big because they certainly didn't learn their lesson. Now, this SVB in Silicon Valley that they shut down because they had 208 trillion invested, but only 174 trillion solvent. And like, oops-a-daisy, we are
because money
is
money is an illusion. Money's been an illusion for a really long time.
Right. I'm actually impressed by that ratio, though, because usually it's like 1 million based on like the 100 million a bank has. It's usually 1 million they keep that solvent, whereas in this case it was 174 trillion and two that was solvent out of 208. So
I know
that's a pretty high percentage.
And the thing is that was crypto, and the crypto is a decimal, and that's what this is. And it's like while we were sleeping, while we were fighting amongst ourselves over what they're doing to us, they stopped using real cash, and money is an illusion. Now it's like, it's not even, it's a computer program. And now they don't know what to do, because like, and now another bank, a big bank, is closing. And now all of our working class people who have jobs that have 401ks, we don't have money. Again, that happened in 2008. My millionaire cousin who works for Disney lost everything my little $8,000 went away that I had. I'm now up to $22,000, which now is going to be zero again. And I don't know what they're going to pull out of their their bag of tricks to keep us from, you know, becoming concerned over this. But this is huge. This is huge. Yeah, the Bitcoin crypto. This is what this is, or that was with the Silicon Bank. Wow.
It's a pretty big deal. I don't have any money in crypto, any money in the stock market. I don't even have a bank account, you know, to be perfectly honest.
Well,
I have a Venmo.
Then you're okay. You're okay. And you
I pulled my money out years ago.
Yeah.
I pulled my money out of the market years ago, and you know, in crypto, I never got into it, and like that.
Oh,
well,
you still have
difference between Danielle and I. Oh, I don't live there. I just spend more time than I want to be there, but I don't live there. But anyway, the point being is, yeah, I mean, I just have a bank account. There's no difference. But either way, it's like, I'm glad I'm out. I'm glad, like, the minute Tesla peaked way back when, I was like, see you later.
This is something. Well, how are you on your Chinese? We should all brush up on that or Arabic because
Thailand. That's about all I got.
Salam, salam alaikum. Salam, salam alaikum.
There you go.
I used to know French.
Yes, I'm fluent in French myself. Yes, well, now we need to start our gardens, our victory gardens, because we no longer have to worry about going to the grocery store because we won't have any currency.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. Well, I tell you what, though. What does it say? Hard times make good men, and good times make soft men.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to build our character, if anything.
Yep. I agree. And especially when it comes to validation. Like, I feel like I've been validated a lot this week and the last couple weeks. And the banks crashing is kind of just icing on the cake. You know, I called that a long time ago. So, you know, with the COVID stuff, the origins coming out, the mask stuff, the J6 stuff, the Twitter file stuff, all, you know, and now the banks, it's like also chickens, right? I mean, how long have I been saying people needed to get chickens, you know? And then, you know, now like it's like the number one most inflated item, I think, is eggs. It's ridiculous. And, you know, we just have extra because of chickens, because we've had chickens for so long, you know? So, you know, and planting gardens, there's an expression, a saying that says the best time to plant a garden is 5 years ago. The second best time is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plant gardens or have a skill that is valuable, that is necessary, right? Like, honestly, like, I don't really want to demean people, but, you know, women or, you know, gender studies isn't necessarily going to help you in life, in college, right? But horticulture will.
Exactly. Home ec would be a plus right now to know how to actually make a meal from leftovers and know what leftovers are. They are not McDonald's.
Yes. Save bacon.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
There's all kinds of things.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, please.
Well, I've been here. I just didn't want to unmute because my dog is a spaz in the car, so she's being quiet
right
now. Hi, Nala. I just would like to say that when Danielle and I had this conversation on Friday, I said, this is going to get bad. And the best time to plant a garden is now. If anybody needs advice about starting a flock of chickens, please message me. If you need any gardening tips, if you need any of that. And I also recommend taking every cent you have out of a bank right now. I'm going to be calling my friend, and I'm going to be telling him to take the money out. Anyway,
well,
I'm going to
use myself again
because Nola's getting ready to spaz. I'll come back on if you need me.
Okay.
Well, drive safe, Carla.
She should be almost home.
And you know, well, good. You know, the easiest thing to grow a garden, because people are like, oh, we can't get seeds. Go to the grocery store, go to the produce section, buy some vegetables, and cut out the seeds and throw them in dirt.
Unless they're GMOs, a lot of the GMOs don't, their seeds don't, are not fruitful. But the organic heirloom, you know, organic section for sure. Heirloom's
yeah.
even better.
Yeah. And see what grows, because I throw everything in the dirt and I'm getting beautiful houseplants that are peppers and tomatoes and ginger and such things. And I need to be a little bit more cognitive of what's going to grow instead of just letting them die.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an easy way to do it. You
potatoes
can grow
are also surprisingly easy to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our first potatoes came from a compost pile.
Oh, God, yeah, potatoes will grow. Yeah. Any core from the celery and the I don't know if cabbage. I'll have to try. I'll have to see how that goes. But in theory, they should.
No, I don't think cabbage does.
No, it won't.
No.
Hmm. Well, the cabbage and the squash, the carrots, the celery. See, it's going to change people's eating habits because we are such a fast food nation that
mm-hmm.
This is really going to hit these people are not going to know what to do.
Right. And
sad.
For the more libertarian mindset people out there, no one's saying that McDonald's and, you know, fast food has to go away. But, you know, what is the harm in giving free choice, right? Food growing on the side of the road is infinitely better for you than anything you're going to get, any chemicals you're going to get from a fast food restaurant. So what is the harm of giving choice? No one's saying that these restaurants have to close down, even though they should. But, you know, in the free capital market.
When you don't have the money to go to a restaurant, which it seems like we are not going to have money when they close the banks. It's very, very
mm-hmm.
disconcerting. We need to become resilient and, yes, go back to our roots, literally. Literally, my goodness.
Absolutely. This should be an emboldening and empowering time. It shouldn't be scary.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a time, you know, we've talked about this many times when there was a baby formula shortage. If only there was another way to feed children other than baby formula, can we come together as a community and exchange, you know, and give breast milk? Anecdotally, I was a cow when I was breastfeeding with both my children. I had stocks of it in the refrigerator or freezer. I gave it to the NICU,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I had my daughter, because I just had so much extra, you know, and so
mm-hmm.
like before formula, what did we do? You know, it's like people are losing their mind over a baby formula shortage, but you know, our society, humans survived for a long time without formula. So how can we come together?
Exactly.
People, women died in childbirth a whole lot more back in the day than they do now. So what happens if there was a baby that their mother died in childbirth? What happens to that baby? Did they just starve to death? Or did they, as a community, bring in a wet nurse and get goat's milk and get all these other things that, you know, had nothing to do with formula? Same thing with banks, same thing with egg shortages, same thing with all of these
mm-hmm.
things that are, you know, that are scaring people into, you know, trauma. Like, can we use
mm-hmm.
these things to embolden and empower humanity versus let everybody, just be scared into submission?
Yes.
Right.
Come
and
together,
to bring you back off that point.
Let's let Harsh go.
Sorry. No, she's right about forming co-ops, but to piggyback off that point, baby formula hasn't been good for babies since at least the late 70s. Like, there's
exactly.
been all sorts of crisis about baby formula being poisonous with Nestle and Johnson back in the day. So for people to be going crazy about a baby formula shortage, I'm not really sure that's a bad thing.
Yeah, agreed.
Considering what they put in that sort of stuff.
Well, you're absolutely right. And for the mothers who are in the know, you know, the movement to go natural has really been around for quite a while. It's just the, oh gosh, the, for lack of a better word, the now generation, that everything comes from a store. And even in the, going to the land of the designer, you know, the land of what, and it's like, no. Go back to the basics, the natural things.
Even to the point of primal instincts, feeding our babies. You know what I mean? Like, that's primal. We're gonna be so lazy that we're gonna let that primal gift that we have, that we can feed our own children, go to the wayside because of convenience?
Mm-hmm. Or corporate programming, you know? It's kind of like, you know, we don't have to buy the product. We have the product. It comes from our own body. It's a beautiful, God-given mechanism. The mother makes the milk. And the big thing is that it's uncomfortable. We have to learn to work through the uncomfortableness. It's like it's too hard to nurse. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't think anybody said it was going to be easy. It's kind of like, you know, this is suck it up. You're doing it for your kid, and it's not for the whole day. It's only for a short amount of time till their little baby belly is full, and then the uncomfortableness is gone. And they're not going to breastfeed for their whole life either. Just a short amount of time. But that's the thing. It's like, it's irritating. And I just am like, you're irritating whining about it. Suck it up and be a mom. But nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
But
I actually once had a doctor tell me because there are, and I don't necessarily agree with him 100%, but there are, a large amount of moms out there that are like, oh, I really wanted to breastfeed, but I couldn't. I didn't have any production, any milk production. I know. And a doctor told me one time that, you know, mothers who say that they don't have milk production, they're right. They have a health condition, a medical condition that prevents them from producing milk, but it's a mental condition, because moms have two breasts for a reason. You should be able to feed twins with no problem, right? And so those people, and I don't necessarily 100% agree with him, but, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, his position of, if you can't produce milk, it's in your head. It's a mental health condition, not a physical health condition, because we've been able to do this for forever.
You know, what's interesting is that if you look around, a lot of our 13-year-old boys are growing breasts because of the chemicals that they're ingesting, through the bad food. That I'm wondering if not that is the same case with the women, is that they have stunted that.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. I also know that girls are having periods way too young, 9 years old, because of the hormones that we're pumping into them.
Yeah, so I think really you need to take full control of your health and change your eating habits and really use those 9 months of being pregnant to really try to become the best for your baby, and not rely upon our corporate society and the big pharma to be the savior. That's kind of a disturbing thing I've noticed. I'm like, what is happening here to our human species via the GMOs and hormones and the bad food? It's very, very sad.
Yeah. Oh, looks like we've got another caller. This might be Lily. I think this might be Lily.
Let's see.
Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry I'm late, always.
We love you. You're right on time. We've got here Harsh Med and Elizabeth.
Hey, Harsh. Hey, Elizabeth. I love you guys.
How are you too, Lily.
How's the life?
Yeah, what's going on with you?
With me?
Yeah.
Just the same stuff as usual.
Yeah.
I think I am getting a little closer to my tires, which is exciting because I think that the financial system is starting to collapse, which is also exciting. But I was laughing at myself today because I was like, wait a minute, I'm not quite ready, though. Can we back it up a tiny bit? And then I laughed at myself because I've been, like, waiting for this for basically my entire life, and I'm really excited for it to happen. And now I'm like, oh, wait, hold up, not ready to go.
I'm going to get so sick of eggs, Lily. If it happened right now, I would get really sick of eggs, but we wouldn't starve.
Right? Yeah, we would be fine. I would just be stuck here and not on the road in my RV, which is where I'd rather be.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not, you know, I think we're all prepared enough that it will be okay. It might be a little bumpy for a tiny bit, but it won't be, like, devastating. It'll just be, you know, potentially annoying if I have to be stuck in Omaha for it.
Yeah, well, you need to get out here. If you, you know, if the banks didn't just collapse, you should probably make your way out here so we can gather the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. I just have to get tires. These stupid tires. Although, you know, everyone's told me, like, don't ever drive on those, you'll die, blah, blah, blah. Well, I drove 4.5 hours on these tires the day that I got it, and I got lost, and I ended up in this weird gravel road that felt like it was going to throw me, I don't know, off the earth. And it was fine, and the tires were fine. So I just have faith that, you know, like, if it's time to go and I don't have tires, then the Creator is going to just divinely protect my RV, you know, and we'll just drive on the tires we have, and it's fine.
You'll get to where you need to be.
Think positive. Mm. Think positive.
Mm. Yeah, they'll all be fine. So, like, ideally we'll get tires, but if we don't, no one's going to die. So I don't really care.
Mm. Nah, that's what's most important. And
If the banks collapsed tomorrow,
I've been ready mentally speaking. I've been ready. The only difference is I'd be cooking more egg fried rice than I'd like to be, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. If you have too many eggs, just cook some rice, and then you cook with those eggs, and then you have egg fried rice, so you can make another curry with it with tomatoes. So there you go.
I love egg fried rice. I have two legitimate tomato forests in my backyard.
All right. There you go.
We don't have a frost, so we have plenty of tomatoes.
All right. I'll just bring the spices over to you, and we can both make egg curry or egg poultice, whatever we call it, and that's it.
Exactly.
There you go.
And get back to the food is just a form of nourishment. If it fills your stomach, you're set. It doesn't have to be a gourmet meal, you know, just as long as you've got something. You know, Irish, St. Patty's Day is coming up, and they didn't have the corned beef. It was more potatoes and cabbage and carrots, things that grew out of the ground. You know, it's you know, meat was a delicacy, not all the time kind of thing. So it's just as long as it's nice and warm and seasoned the right way, or even if you don't have the seasoning, a boiled potato will fill you up. We got to get out of there.
Fun fact about potatoes, they didn't actually come from Europe. They actually came from North America. But because of traveling and colonization and all that, they're just able to bring, you know, crops like, potatoes and tomatoes all through to Europe and Asia. So,
throws a little monkey wrench in the whole timeline of history. The Europeans didn't bring things to us. They came from here, which, you know, the lost civilization of North America. You know, I saw this really cool discovery of an archaeological site that dates back, and I was like, well, isn't this interesting? 8,000-year-old civilization in Miami underneath a parking lot they found. And they've been excavating this. Yes. very much so. So I think Graham Hancock is doing a little happy dance.
Right? Yeah. Speaking of somebody who deserves validation.
Exactly. Yeah, right. The truth comes out in time. You give enough time and the truth does come out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as for previous civilizations, there's a reason why so many cities and towns and states in the U.S. have Middle Eastern names, have Moorish names.
Or Egyptian. How many Cairos
right.
are there? You know?
How many Cairos, Niles?
This is a European or Egyptian. Yeah, it's
right.
fascinating. Fascinating on that.
Even down to Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or Yellowstone? No, Yosemite. No.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Grand Canyon?
Well, yes, the Grand Canyon has a lot of Egyptian that has been locked down the forbidden zone of the Colorado. They don't want us to see the hidden Egyptian sites there. That's taboo. Yes. It's fascinating.
Really is.
So to change gears just a little bit, so I did a show with Harsh this Friday about Kinsey.
Kinsey syndrome, yep.
The Kinsey syndrome. And, it's really interesting that they've got us, so hypnotized in so many areas and with quote unquote science also. So, and Kinsey is just another example. It's just insane how they've got us really like pigeonholed into, believing that, infant orgasms is a real thing. And, how they've got quote unquote science to back it up.
So disturbing that they would do those type of things. What kind of a mind would go into the land of trying to investigate infant orgasms? It's just so fucking disturbing. And here, is this the same Kinsey that put up the Kinsey Report that was so famous in the 70s?
Yeah, the Kinsey Report, yes.
Yeah. Oh, what a Mengele-like individual he was.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Trained by the same
thing. That he would have, a man that would do that would have any level of credibility. And to not question that he would do that and then take everything that he throws out as scientific fact is the great new wonderful discovery of how humans should go. And not to question that was allowed.
No.
I
mean, that's so disturbing that people don't question things like that. But then again, from what I've seen lately, people don't like questioning a lot. People don't like you when you question a lot of things these days, even their favorite live streamers.
And that, I'm sure, was corporate-driven. The big corporations
right.
have our best interests all the time.
Well, actually, the thing I found fascinating was the fact that the same people who – not sorry to interrupt for a second, but same people who are behind, like, the education and the medical industry and the education industry going to hell – were the same people who sponsored Kinsey in the first place, and that's the Rockefellers. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So, I mean, that's just what I was like, wow. It is mind-blowing. How one group can just just set us all to hell.
Power. Power and greed. And... And then again, it's our fault for laying down and giving our we let these people lord over us with their supposed knowledge instead of knowing in our hearts what was right and that this didn't make sense. That was like it's almost our fault for allowing that. And not and letting that to flourish instead of questioning. You know?
Agreed.
Right, and it was so agreed. And it was so messed up that the only way they could even counteract that in the 90s was to create the sex offender registry list, which even though that itself has its own, you know, draconian elements, that's still better than nothing. That's still better than the alternative.
Right.
And that's just how terrible the whole situation is. You know, if you had draconian, if you had the laws they wanted to have in the first place before Kinsey, you know, interjected and fucked that all up, then you wouldn't have needed the registry because, well, they just would have been like life and double life sentences anyway. So,
yeah, or
well,
death penalty.
Should come back. That would have been a scarlet letter moment. These people should have it tattooed on their head that they're sick.
Right. Or castrated,
Disease.
Whichever.
Uh-huh.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking the other day on the show about how, you know, the media basically came in and kind of rescued Kinsey and promoted Kinsey and all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, and I'm not quite sure why Oprah, this, you know, especially after the things that we know about Oprah, would raise attention to something as significant as, you know, satanic ritual abuse. But, you know, while we were, you know, over here, you know, on Donahue saying that child orgasms are okay and they should happen, we have Oprah. And I wanted to get to this on the show, Harsh, with you, but it ran a little bit late. I'd love to play this 4-minute clip of Oprah, interviewing this person, and this is from your neighborhood, right? Both of yours, Harsh, and Elizabeth.
Yes.
Let me play this real quick. It's just 4 minutes. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
My next guest was used also in worshiping the devil, participated in human sacrifice rituals and cannibalism. She says her family has been involved in rituals for generations. She is currently in extensive therapy, suffers from multiple personality disorder, meaning she's blocked out many of the terrifying and painful memories of her childhood. Meet Rachel, who is also in disguise to protect her identity. You come from generations of ritualistic abuse?
Yes. My family has an extensive family tree, and they keep track of who's been involved and who hasn't been involved. And it's gone back to, like, 1700.
And so you were...
Right. I was born into a family that believes in this.
And this is it. Does everyone else think it's a nice Jewish family? From the outside, you appear to be a nice Jewish girl.
Definitely.
And you all are worshiping the devil inside the home?
Right. There's other Jewish families across the country. It's not just my own family.
Really? And so who knows about it? Lots of people now.
I talked to a police detective in the Chicago area. And several of my friends know, and I've spoke publicly before. And
so when you were brought up in this kind of evilness, did you just think it was normal?
I've blocked out a lot of the memories I had because of my multiple personality disorder. But, yes, I mean, it's like if you grow up with something, you think it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought...
So what kinds of things? You don't have to give us the gory details, but what kinds of things went on in the family?
Well, there would be rituals in which babies would be sacrificed, and you would have to, you know...
Who's babies?
There were people who bred babies in our family. No one would know about it. A lot of people were overweight, so you couldn't tell if they were pregnant or not, or they would supposedly go away for a while and then come back. The other thing I want to point out, not all Jewish people sacrifice babies. I mean,
no.
It's not a very
we
kind of
know that.
I just want to point that out.
This is the first time I heard of any Jewish people sacrificing babies. But anyway, so you witnessed the sacrifice.
Right. When I was very young, I was forced to participate in that, in which I had to sacrifice an infant.
And the purpose of sacrifice is to what? Is to bring you what? What are you sacrificing for?
For power.
Uh-huh. Power. And so were you ever used yourself?
I was molested. I was raped several times.
Mm-hmm. And what's your mother doing?
She's
in all of this? What's her role in all of this?
What is? I'm not exactly what her role is. I haven't, you know, recovered all of my memories, but her family was extremely involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she brought me to it. Mm-hmm. Both of my parents brought me to it.
And where is she now?
She lives in the Chicago metropolitan area. She's on the Human Relations Commission of the town that she lives in, and she's an upstanding citizen. Nobody would suspect her.
Were you raised with a sense of right and wrong, Rachel?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I had both. I mean, to the outside world, everything we did was proper and right, and then there were the nights that things changed, that things just got turned around. What was right was, what was wrong was right, and what was right was wrong. That's what helps to create somebody, to develop MPD.
Mm-hmm. Multiple personalities.
Right.
Now, in your family, did you all call it worshiping the devil?
No.
Rachel,
I don't know.
It was just evil, things you did.
Right.
Right.
Well, I said it was evil, and mm-hmm. they said it was good. There's a book that I had just come across called Lilith's Cave, which is a book of Jewish mysticism and supernatural, and there's a lot in that book that relates to what I, you know, endured when I was a child.
Okay, so if we want to know how we got to this place, this might have something to do with it. I think
very
that...
very ironic. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. It's very ironic that she did a video, that she was doing an interview on that when she herself was involved in that shit 2 years later.
I'm trying to remember exactly what it was that discredited all of these interviews, because there was quite a few of them, and then they actually piggybacked over to Donahue, and then the nation was just horrified. But then somebody came out and proved that they were all lying. Like, I believe they might have even had one of them came back and recanted and said, oh, I was making this all up. Which, you know, now that we know how things work, that was the perfect controlled opposition coming from the powers that be that wanted to hide this.
Right. So they had this satanic panic come out.
Yeah, but I can't really remember exactly who was behind it. But I know that after that, you had another guy who came out from the Houston area and did a great documentary. I believe it was called The Lost Boys, but I could be wrong.
Boys for Sale.
You're highlighting the male prostitute industry and the lost teenage boys, and what a lucrative prostitution thing that was going on in the Houston area.
Yes.
A high echelon of, you know, rich corporate men that were the guys that utilized these poor young boys. And
yes,
that we really had a problem in this country. And then that got demonized too. And then out came... oh, what's his name? He was the former FBI, head of the FBI came out. What's his name? And he spoke about, he blew the lid off of everything, of how corrupt it was and how degraded our society is.
It wasn't Gunderson, right? You're not talking about Gunderson?
Yeah, Gunderson.
Yeah.
Yes. And then he gets demonized and killed. And then, you know, there's more... I mean, when you peel up that onion, just is like, oh my God, makes you cry. But it's the truth. Once it's out, it comes out, and no matter how many people try to put that genie back in the bottle, it's there, and we have a big, big problem. And every time you see anybody trying to poo-poo it, you know that they are being bought and paid for by the
They use the mental health field really to discredit the majority of it. You know, they used a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists to come out and sue therapists that lied and created false memories in their patients.
That's right.
You know, this is partly why I didn't end up finishing my master's degree, you know, because I just couldn't stomach a lot of that stuff. And they were still kind of preaching that sort of stuff to us, right? Like, even in school, you know, this notion that all of that stuff is a lie and that people that are crazy just make it up. And it's, you know, the same thing with, like, they teach you the dangers of religion, which I'm not, like, particularly religious, but I'm extremely spiritual, you know, and they were teaching, like, the dangers of those kind of beliefs, and then I got accused of having dangerous opinions, you know, and so that's why I quit, because they literally, they were using those people to discredit their own colleagues, you know, and say that they laced them with, like, sodium barbitol and different things to, like, create false memories. And none of that was true, right? Like, none of that actually happened that way. But that became, like, the story that all the news stations ran to discredit everybody, was that it was just these poor people were victims of their therapist.
And then we had a new disease come to the town, the Munchausen's disease, where they were just making this up to get attention. Yeah, it's insane. How many?
Well, Munchausen's is more than just that. Okay, so Munchausen's mental health meets physical health, right? So you are you know, a hypochondriac, basically, you know, to get attention.
Right.
But usually it involves making other people sick. Like, usually, you know, like, it was parents making a child sick.
There's Munchausen's, and then there's Munchausen's by proxy, and that's against other people.
Right.
But you never heard about that until it was needed to make all these people's stories be discredited. That there's a slew of crazy people out there that will do anything for attention, pay no attention to the crazy people. And, and the story went away. That's all it took.
Well, part of it was because of what you all mentioned, but another part of it is just straight up duress. You know, I guarantee you someone visited their houses at some point and told them, hey, cut this crap off. You better discredit yourself or else you're going to see what it's really like.
Right. That's
true. Unfortunately. I mean, you know, some of these people in power are just straight up goons.
Most.
They're the actual thugs and savages. Yeah, they're the actual thugs, savages, and goons, you know.
Hey, you.
I totally agree.
Well, you know, it's a sick little club of people, for sure. And they always like to be the pillars of society, you know, the wife beaters. The people that have the most darkest, horrible secrets. Yeah. And it's just, it's really, really sad. And that, I imagine, is exactly why the victim has such a hard time being heard, because look at this cop. He's wonderful. Like that guy that was running the race, I think, in Georgia, where his wife came out, and I think he tried to run her over. And they videotaped her talking to the police, and she had just been under such abuse. And here he is. He's the most wonderful man on earth. And he still won that race, right, by playing you know. And that's the quintessential, what the hell do they call them? Narcissistic.
Is the
number one personality trait of all these horrible people that do this with their families, whether it be the beating and the abuse. And they certainly play the part and make it even harder for anyone to believe, because he's so wonderful. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I detest when people say, you know, according to this topic, you know, where are the victims? You know, if this is such an epidemic, where are the victims? Well, the victims are in jail, you know, like there's most of them. And there's lots of studies and I've had personal experience with large studies, large population study, prison studies, that basically say that, you know, 60 to 80% of women in prison are either molested, you know, sexually abused or physically abused as children. And so it's just kind of mind-boggling to me that people, you know, they just because it's such a taboo, stigmatized subject, that you know, people don't talk about it, right? If you're an abuse victim, you don't really talk about it in your everyday life. You just try to cope and get on with it. If you remember it, then, you know, you've got a lot of coping mechanisms, you know, that usually
and
are...
What's the favorite? The favorite mode of coping is drugs and alcohol. So
drugs and alcohol.
They're just some strung out junkie on the street. Why would anybody believe them? But what made them like this? Yeah.
So precisely.
It's a terrible
I want to play another 4-minute video. I've played it before, but this is of a local news station covering the ministry that I've been on the board of, very closely related to, and my mom was a founding member of, talking about this. It's only a 4-minute clip, and my mom is actually in this clip. They mispronounce her last name. It's Carla Lamiglio, but they say Lamiglio, and they say she's from El Cajon, but she's from Carlsbad. But I want to play this for you because this is very close to home. Welcome home. And this is actually the organization that got that data from the prisons. So here we go, 3, 2, 1.
Now from the 10 News Communications Center, this is 10 News Live at 11.
The number of women in prisons around the country has tripled over the past few years.
Most women end up in prison because of drug problems, and many come from dysfunctional families. But a North County program says it doesn't have to be that way. 10 News reporter Elsa Sevilla explains why in a special report.
Layers of barbed wire ring the California Institute for Women in Riverside, California. This maximum security prison is home to many San Diego women. Inside every door, two inmates live in a 9x9 cell, bunk beds, a sink, and a toilet. San Diegan Brandy Rowland is one of the inmates.
I had a drug problem, and I got caught with some dope on me.
30-year-old Rowland has been shot and stabbed at least 6 times. Her mother abandoned her at 6. At 19, she was sent to prison for using a gun. Assault with a deadly weapon. She spent time for drug use and has been in and out of prison since.
The worst part about what I've done in the past is that I've taken this life that I have and these choices that I have, and I'm wasting it.
Many of the women at CIW have similar stories. Yesenia Barrera from Oceanside never knew her biological parents, got hooked on drugs at 14 after losing her adopted mother to ovarian cancer.
In the beginning, I always said, as long as I don't shove a needle in my arm, I'm okay. You know, but a couple years into it, I was using needles also.
Barrera turned 30 behind bars this spring. She has spent about half of her life behind bars. She'll be paroled this summer and worries about life on the outside.
I'll be very honest, I'm scared. I'm very scared.
Women spend years of their lives in and out of prison, but Welcome Home Ministries is trying to break that cycle.
You don't use, you won't come back to jail. How simple is that?
Welcome Home has changed Carla Lomiglio's life.
And a drug addict. I was a methamphetamine addict and a drug dealer.
Lomiglio is from El Cajon. She identifies with these women.
My job is to go into jails and prisons, talk about my experience, strength, and hope, share with them who I used to be and who I am today.
While serving time at the California Institute for Women, Lomiglio discovered Welcome Home. Now she's returned to help others.
Who are they going to call?
San Diegan Reverend Carmen Warner Robbins founded Welcome Home 10 years ago. She wants to help women break the cycle to never return to prison.
Their family is not wanting anything to do with them. If they're calling for a place to stay, they call the people that got them in. I mean, it's just a downward spiral.
Welcome Home is making a difference with an unheard-of rate of success in helping women adjust to the free world.
Women, of every 100 women, only 5 of them will go back, and the rest of them we integrate into our community. That is an unheard-of statistic.
For women like Barrera and Roland, it's helping them make better choices.
You have to change your thinking, and it has to start from in here.
Elsa Sevilla, 10 News.
Welcome Home Ministries is already in 3 separate states across the country and in Canada. The hope is to bring the program to every major prison for women and men nationwide. For more information, just go to our website at 10news.com.
So that was 10 years ago. And, you know, the prison system has not changed. You know, they're still keeping these people in. And just the other day on Friday, Harsh, we were talking in that documentary about, you know, 80% recidivism rate and all this stuff about about sexual predators. However, that's the overall recidivism rate. Do you know that? I wanted to say that during the show, but commentary wasn't necessarily it was a little awkward to comment.
Yeah, I mean, that was just how the documentary was.
We
could have had a better pregame show with all that than we did. So.
I think so, too. That information, and I'm not trying to downplay that pedophilia is a big deal. I obviously know it's a big deal.
Right.
But the recidivism rate is 80% across the board. You know?
Right.
That is true. So that, and that's something that we've really worked hard for, with Welcome Home, is to reduce the recidivism rate. And we got it down to 5%, 80%
to
5%.
Pretty remarable.
Yeah. And this should be in every state.
And that's exactly what we need. And look at how your mother's flourished and became like just this amazing angel of hope to everybody else, and it just shows that works, why that is not a standard, cookie cutter. This is what we do, guys. This works. Let's do it everywhere.
Yeah.
And the reason why we don't is because they don't want it to work. There's more money in having people in crisis, so they can be the hero and they can make the money off of them being sick, mentally broken. And that's why we don't pick up on these things that work and are beneficial. And shame on them. And shame on us for allowing it,
Yeah.
And I think that we need to talk more about how wonderful this program is and what it did.
Right.
It should be in every state.
Absolutely. Every town, because every town is now inundated with horrible addiction caused by big pharma. If they're not addicted to street drugs, they're addicted to pharmaceutical drugs. And they got called on that, thank the gods. But still, they've got that mentality that this is what we go to. And then miraculously, we have medical marijuana dispensaries, because that's what we want. We want you to be wasted. We don't need to deal with reality. It's better to do this. And here you go. And it's like, no.
Well, okay, so I believe, just really quick, I really do believe that these medical marijuana laws and these recreational marijuana laws stemmed from the fact that people who were abused as children, physically, sexually abused as children, have this you know, coping mechanism that they need to get past. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the people who are in jail because of drugs, you know, we're not really looking at the underlying cause. You know, we're not really looking, we're just mm-hmm. trying to get 12 steps back into society, you know, and, mm-hmm. And honestly, like if we really focused on the ultimate cause, the underlying cause of why people are addicted to any substance, whether it's alcohol, mm-hmm. marijuana, meth, fentanyl, all of it, I believe it's mm-hmm. to cope with trauma of the past.
Yeah, exactly. In the stress of the day. We don't have strong coping mechanisms. And, no. and the government just wants to, here, escape, go escape. We don't. They never want us to grow up and learn how to walk on our own.
Yeah.
And it's not.
What did Jimmy Dore say? We're the adult children of alcoholics.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, marijuana has some fantastic benefits. It can be a very good use of a drug. It's a healing herb. But it also makes you not want to do anything. You're just la-di-da. And
well,
that's really not a great way to have a whole society of people not functioning. And that's my problem with it. Because, you know, it's good to unwind. It's good to – but to not be able to have the full set of armor to be able to deal with problems in situations, in be proactive, in be
but
a solution.
But I feel like we're doing a disservice to society by talking about marijuana like it's a problem and not alcohol. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like alcohol has a lot more, you know, and that's legal. You can do that. And we've got a whole system set up around curing people of alcoholism. But when it comes to other substances. What's that?
That's all based on money. I mean,
correct.
You're talking about it, right? That's the problem is that the alcohol industry has basically bought our laws and our entertainment and all the sponsoring since the
mm-hmm.
1930s. The
yeah.
fact that it
and
was
tobacco.
Like subsidized by big pharma, right? And alcohol and tobacco. The fact that big pharma somehow subsidized it, I don't want to say is a miracle because big pharma's horrible, but it's rather surprising.
Yeah.
That Big Pharma was able to subside alcohol and tobacco as like the big industries.
Oh. Well, anything, you know, anything that does a detriment to one's abilities to function, it's really not. See, the problem is we don't know when the playtime and then there's work time. Now there's just everybody just all day long is playtime, and there's no, you know, it's like, kind of like it impairs our society from becoming the best it can be, and it impairs your judgment. And we're going the wrong direction. We should have gone like the other direction to where it's kind of like, let's learn how to cope with our problems. Let's learn how to be more productive. Let's learn how to temper our reaction to things. Instead, it's like, let's dull them. Let's medicate them. And that's the wrong direction to be going in, no matter what the medication is, whether it be alcohol or marijuana or, you know, the mushrooms. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Anybody who's been on mushrooms, that's not – you don't want a whole population just getting to a trip. You just don't. I'm
Although
sorry.
I do have to say, microdosing probably would do – much better for society than SSRIs. Am I wrong?
Probably
that's
so, but
not much of a statement. SSRIs are just
right.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. My goodness. But anyways, my I guess my point is any. I think we are unique, although there is Holland, Denmark, there are a few other countries that it's legal to do these things. But I'm wondering, do they not have a little more common sense as a society that they're responsible enough and they handle it. It's worked for them, and somehow we're just like these out of control. Anything we get, we use it the wrong way. It doesn't seem
well. It depends, though, because like if you look at alcohol, for example, if you look at all of these European countries where it's not taboo, there's no age limit. You know, like families have a glass of wine or whatever together for dinner, things like that. They don't have issues with binge drinking and alcoholism and drunk driving and stuff the way that we do here because it's not taboo. So it's not something that children are like, oh, my God, I'm 21 and now I can do this or I'm 18 or whatever, you know, and so now I can finally do this thing that nobody will let me do. And then they go like way overboard with it. Instead, it's just this, like, commonplace thing. And, you know, in Amsterdam and countries like that, weed is the same way, right? Like, it's not this, like, big taboo spectacular thing. It's just everybody knows about it. It exists. You know, like, anybody can use it for whatever purpose they want. And so a lot of people don't, or they do use it, like, the same way that people would, like, use beer, right? Like, just you get off work and you have a beer or two. Whatever, you know, you smoke a joint, and that's how it is. So it's not that the substances are the problem necessarily, although I would argue that alcohol kind of is, but regardless, like the problem is the way that society views things, talks about them to the youth, treats them. You know, if you don't make a big deal about it, it's not a big deal. But I think that that's where in this country things get kind of weird, you know, like to your point, Elizabeth, is because it's so taboo and this cool, fun thing to do, and you have to be a specific age. And I think that that's really where a lot of the issue comes from. But then on the flip side of that, you know, I'm all for legalization and decriminalization. But I also know that there are so many people still in prison for selling marijuana. And yet now anybody can go sell marijuana with a license. And, you know, like, it's fine. And my issue with all of that is that you've got these, not all of them, of course, but you've got a lot of big, like, corporation kind of companies now buying up all of the weed. In fact, I've talked to people who own greenhouses about this because they were having a really hard time getting supplies for their greenhouses because it was all being bought up by these huge corporations like Bayer, who are now, you know, like, owning the dispensaries. And the problem for me with that is what synthetic things are they adding? Because if you remember like K2 and Spice, you know that we've, Elizabeth, like Danielle, you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, people were like freaking out and committing suicide on that. You know, like, so weed in itself is not dangerous or harmful at all. But when you make it synthetic and, you know, and add stuff to it, that's my concern because I don't trust Bayer to make my Tylenol. Let alone, you know, to sell me weed.
Exactly.
Right.
That itself is a bigger issue than what people want to realize. Monsanto and Bayer, Monsanto.
There's another issue that really has been out of the public spotlight and not really able to be debated for a long time, and that is the other properties that the, you know, cannabis plant you know, it's a plant. It can make all kinds of things, insulation for walls, paper, you know, and why this, you know, who was it? I think it was Thomas Jefferson that was a hemp farmer. Benjamin Franklin was a hemp farmer, you know, and they didn't necessarily grow this shit to get high. You know, they didn't do that. You know, a lot of it was about, you know, making paper and, you know, and lumber products and insulation and all kinds of stuff. Like not denim, but like an alternative to denim, you know, that that instead of just embracing, you know, other corporations like alcohol, tobacco, lumber, lobbied against cannabis. And, you know, and so that's ultimately why it was illegal. That's ultimately why there was they were never able to study the health benefits of marijuana at all or CBD or any of it because, you know, there was this blackout of because of our, you know, our governmental system. So, you know, you know, right now to this day, as we speak, you know, marijuana is more legal than cocaine. Why is that? Well, because there's eye surgery that use cocaine, you know, like, you know, like there is an element of medical benefit that has been studied and researched and peer reviewed and all of these things, the whole scientific process, that marijuana, cannabis, has never been allowed to have been studied. Only in the last few years has the scientific, quote unquote, scientific research been able to proceed with marijuana, and it seems to come at a standstill because they bring up things like, you know, children and teenagers who smoke marijuana, there's a higher level of schizophrenia, just in teenagers and children. And who in the fuck is saying that we should be giving marijuana to normal children, right, in any kind of way? So, you know what I mean? It's like, so if you're talking about giving, nobody is talking about giving children unregulated marijuana. Nobody. Nobody.
Right.
However, you know, this is what we're faced with, is that, you know, the only outcomes that we're really allowed to see is that, you know, children who smoke marijuana are more likely to be schizophrenic, and somewhere along the line, as these strains get stronger, it might kill somebody. Up until this point, nobody's ever really died of, you know, an overdose of marijuana. You know, there might have been a farmer that got, you know, that had a, you know, a huge bale of hay, you know, of marijuana fall over on them. Mm. Maybe he died or something. But that's the only, there's no deaths attributed to marijuana, period, end of sentence. Mm. But because of these stronger strains possibly available, we might have somebody die. And that's the reason to keep it off. I just don't get it.
But the vaccine's okay, even though everyone is having sudden death from it.
It's ineffective.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But go back.
You know, I would like to see the cannabis industry become a little more responsible if they're going to give them any credibility at all. Yes, take back the extra potent THC that they're putting into it, because I've seen studies where because of the high THC, it is putting people into psychotic mode because it's just too much. Your body can't handle it. But also when they want to have their cannabis gummies, no. You don't make drugs look exactly like gummy bears that children eat. That's the most irresponsible thing I've ever seen. That should have been pulled away. There's other ways you make and even the cookies and the brownies. It's kind of like, you know what? Let's make it totally, absolutely, you can tell what this is. This is not you can't have grandma's brownies because it shouldn't be a brownie. It shouldn't be a gummy bear. It should be in a bottle. It should be a smokable. Be responsible. But they've lost their minds on their marketing.
Okay, but we can have, hold on. Cotton candy vodka is okay?
Right. No. Candy should be candy.
Wow.
Drugs should be. You know, be responsible.
That sounds diabetic.
They lost their
cotton candy vodka.
It sounds like they're marketing to children.
People can't smoke it, right? So, like, there's like cannabis butter because not, you know, like for example, like I have asthma. Marijuana helps me a lot with, like when I used to struggle with a lot of anxiety, it helped me. When I used to have a really hard time sleeping and I had depression, like that helped me immensely with all of those things. But I have asthma. So, you know, like smoking it is not a super smart idea for me. But if I can eat it,
second mark.
But no, right. I come in a nice little bottle, an oil bottle, where you just do drops. I mean, you have to make it something that could be, you can mistakenly use the wrong butter. It's kind of like, come on.
Yeah, but, well, no, you can make like an oil with it. I mean, I've seen there are parents that have children who have really bad seizures, and they will put the oil, rub it on the bottoms of their feet, you know?
And that's how it should be. There should be no mistaking it. They just lost it when they did that.
Right. I'm just going to say, like when the cannabis industry does that, to me, it's not even the fact of, like, getting it confused. You're just causing people another way to go completely diabetic.
All right. And with that note, we get our 10 seconds, 5 seconds. We love you all. We will talk to you next week. Share if you can.
Love you.
Love you.
Y'all.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. Have a great week. Mm-hmm.